Okay, good evening and welcome to the April 26th public hearing meeting of the Carrboro Board of Aldermen. And I have, should I start with a proclamation? Okay. This is Holocaust Remembrance Week. And we have, that's okay. We have a proclamation in recognition of Holocaust Remembrance Week. Whereas the Holocaust was a state-sponsored systematic persecution and annihilation of European Jewry by Nazi Germany and its collaborators between 1933 and 1945, in addition to the Jewish community, gypsies, the handicapped, Poles, homosexuals, Jehovah's Witnesses, Soviet prisoners of war, and political dissents all suffered grievous oppression and death under Nazi tyranny. And whereas the history of the Holocaust offers an opportunity to reflect on the moral responsibilities of individuals, societies, and governments, and whereas all communities should remember the terrible events of the Holocaust and remain vigilant against hatred, persecution, and tyranny, and whereas we, the people of the town of Carrboro, in remembrance of the Holocaust, should rededicate ourselves to the principles of individual freedom in a just society, and whereas the days of remembrance have been set aside for the people of the town of Carrboro to remember the victims of the Holocaust, as well as to reflect on the need for respect of all peoples, and whereas, pursuant to the Act of Congress, Public Law 96-388, October 7, 1980, the United States Holocaust Memorial Council designates that communities shall set aside days of remembrance in memory of the Holocaust. And whereas Carrboro is proclaiming the week of April 24th through May 1st, 2011, as the days of remembrance, including the day of remembrance known as Yom HaShoah on May 1st, and now, therefore, may it be resolved that I, Randy Haven O'Donnell, sitting in for Mayor Mark Chilton, Mayor of the Town of Carrboro, North Carolina, do hereby proclaim the week of April 24th through May 1st, 2011, as days of remembrance in memory of the victims of the Holocaust and in honor of the survivors as well as the rescuers and liberators, and further proclaim that we, as citizens of the Town of Carrboro, shall work to promote human dignity, confront hate, and pledge to end genocide whenever and wherever it occurs.
Thanks, Randy.
Let's see. I don't know. I'm kind of got lost there. It's a bit emotional for me. Tonight is a public hearing on the R3 conditional use zoning rezoning and conditional use permit for Viridia Architecturally Integrated Subdivision. We do not have any speakers signed up at this time, so I believe there's a staff.
Yeah, we have a staff presentation first, Trish McGuire, followed by Marty Roop, and then I believe the applicant has a presentation as well. Trish.
Good evening, everyone. meetings on rezonings and conditional use permits like this hearings on items like this occur simultaneously, and the public hearing allows an opportunity for members of the public to provide comments on the requested rezoning and CUP application, and for the Board of Aldermen to receive those comments and make a decision regarding the requested actions. The rezoning in front of the town this evening is from Sustainable Properties, Limited Liability Corporation, the owner of two tracts of land on Old Fayetteville Road that total about 4.66 acres, excuse me. And the requested action is to rezone the property from R20 to R2 conditional use. The site is located right here. It's a little bit more than a half mile from the intersection of NC 54 and Old Fayetteville Road, just south of the McDougal Schools complex. Scenario photograph taken fairly recently showing the site. One of the two lots is where the majority of the activity has occurred historically. And so there are a total of 37 single mobile homes on the property, two site-built structures, and some adjacent and some additional outbuildings. This is Old Fayetteville Road here. The map is oriented to the with north to the right on the screen at the moment. The zoning of the adjacent properties are to the north, east, and south. The properties are all zoned R20, and then across the road, across Old Fayetteville Road, the properties are zoned WR. There is primarily existing single-family residential development around the site. The lots directly across Old Fayetteville Road are currently forested and don't have dwellings on them. A little bit of background on this site. As it's obvious, the property is already developed. As I mentioned, there are 37 mobile homes and two single-family homes on the property, three miscellaneous accessory buildings. The density on the site does exceed that allowed fairly considerably by what's allowed in the R20. The right to this density was established by a court case between the town and previous property owner Gray Moody in 1970. And in conversations with the current owners in 2008, the staff determined that a one-for-one replacement of the existing buildings, both mobile homes and site-built homes, with newly constructed buildings, residential buildings, could occur. Why is this coming before the town as a conditional use rezoning request? Well, the change in the permissible density on the site will allow the existing development and the density that is grandfathered or established by the court case to remain on the property in a more conforming manner. It will establish some, either increase or establish some site features that are more in line with what the land use ordinance seeks to see included in residential development. It allows, obviously, in the context of this hearing, full and open consideration of the details of the development plan. Does provide the town with, and the Board of Aldermen in particular, with broad authority to consider the appropriateness of the rezoning and the details of the development plan. But it provides for greater scrutiny of all the elements of it. And as this is a conditional use rezoning, it provides a pretty significant level of scrutiny of what's before you. So what are the differences between the R20 and the R2 CU? Principally, the principal difference is that there is a wide difference in the amount of residential development that can occur. The existing zoning requires 20,000 square feet per dwelling unit, and the proposed or requested zoning seeks a level of density 2,000 square feet per dwelling unit. This site is not utilizing all of the density that would be available to it under that zoning classification. The height restrictions are different. The buildings are allowed to be taller in the R2 CU. Again, this application isn't seeking to maximize all of the height that's allowed under that change. The setbacks are one of the other changes where you see one of the other elements of the site plan that are pretty significantly different between the R20 and the R2. The setbacks from the right-of-way in the R20 are 40 feet and 20 feet at the property lines, 15 and 7.5 at the lot boundary lines. And with a small site like we have in front of us, those lower dimensions for setbacks provide greater conformity of this redeveloped site plan with the land use ordinance. The R20, as all of our residential zoning districts, has a range of residential uses that are allowed based on limited by the density and some non-residential uses as well. The requested action before you tonight and the proposal is just for the property to be a residential development. There are some procedural requirements that apply to conditional use rezonings found in several sections of the land use ordinance. And the Board of Aldermen will be considering the reports, staff reports, site plans, and other information that come out in this public hearing to use that information towards determining whether or not the proposed rezoning would or would not be consistent with the public health, safety, or welfare. The first provisions are found in 15.141.3, dealing with conditional use rezoning. The request has to be initiated by owners of the property, and it has been. The use needs to be permissible within the R2 zoning district, and it is. The development application is for the entirety of the property. They are seeking this application to include both properties that are adjacent to one another. There is simultaneous review, submittal and review of the applications and conduct of the public hearing. Moving to the amendments article of the land use ordinance, there isn't a required time frame for the decision. But when the board decides to act on the text amendment portion of this, the map amendment portion of this request, as you always do with regard to amendments to the land use ordinance, a statement will need to be adopted that describes whether the action is consistent with an adopted plan and explaining why the action is believed to be reasonable in the public and in the public interest. And then there is, a prohibition against members voting or the outcome of the amendment is reasonably likely to have a direct, substantial, and readily identifiable financial impact on the member. So again, looking at Section 15.325, the advancement of the public health, safety, or welfare is the key issue, and other issues are irrelevant. While there isn't a specific adopted planning document that pertains to this question, since there is not, we look to the Vision 2020 document to provide some policy guidance. There are three policy statements that seem to have relevance to the proposal. The first deals with preservation of the natural environment, and by moving forward with this conditional use permit request and conditional use rezoning, the site plan is being, and if it's approved, the project would be developed incorporating open space, which is not currently part of the development or of the requirements to develop the adjacent lot where the mobile homes are not located. The town should continue to strive to include, to provide for a diverse housing stock. This development does have a diverse housing stock in that it is proposed to include a number of sustainability features in the way the homes are constructed that is unavailable in most developments in the town, perhaps all of them, that the applicants can speak specifically to that, and I think will. The town should encourage the reduction of waste materials in the course of new construction or renovation, be a leader in and require, where practical, the use of recycled building materials, and to the extent to which green building techniques are being employed, and the emphasis here is on the green building component of this policy statement in light of the range of sustainability features which are being included in the project. Just a couple of findings for your consideration. Adopted policies do support the establishment of conditional use districts. The developed square footage and intensity that would result from the approval of this project are not significantly increased under the proposal. The conditional use rezoning approach, of course, provides an open forum for consideration of the application, as well as consideration of mitigation strategies for possible impacts from the change in zoning. The combined quasi-judicial legislative action gives the board, again, broad authority to consider the request. The property is suited in its current development and in the density and type of development provided for it under the court case for this type of zoning classification. And the new development will provide some residential opportunities and amenities that are not included at the present time. And Marty has a few slides to show you and walk you through the CUP application.
Thanks, Trish.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Trish.
Good evening, everybody.
Good morning.
Good evening.
Yes, thanks.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm to the evidence you're about to give the truth to the best of your knowledge?
I do. Okay, I'm going to more or less jump straight into what I have to show you. Trish has covered a fair amount of the information that I otherwise might disclose as a part of a conditional use permit presentation, but property location, size of the property, and density, things of that she's already covered. So I'll begin by jumping into the site plan. I'm going to describe it, show you a few slides, and then discuss some topics. First, as Trish showed, it involves two pieces of property. The existing driveway, if you're familiar with the site, runs kind of down the middle of the mobile homes on either side. That's proposed to be converted into an asphalt walkway with, again, homes on either side of it. The main ingress-egress point would be on the northern lot. Again, it's for two-way traffic, goes back and has a T-turnaround at the end. There was some discussion early on of the possibility of making that a public road with thoughts of it possibly continuing down in this direction to serve some underdeveloped property. But it was fairly quickly determined that was just not feasible given the intensity of development on this site. There just wasn't room for right-of-way. They couldn't have had the parking next, the carports next to the road. There were various issues that made that not possible. They have, however, shown and included a pedestrian and bike easement in this area that would go to the property towards the south. They're also negotiating a possible east-west connection over into the existing neighborhood across an existing Owasse easement, again for pedestrian and bikes, not for vehicles. There's a bus stop just off of the slide here across Old Fayetteville Road. Existing bus stop, so that is covered. Chapel Hill Transit didn't call for any improvements. They're satisfied with it. The parking layout, I started to discuss earlier, the carports, three buildings in this location north of the driveway, and also parallel parking along the southern side of the driveway in blue, and some perpendicular parking up near the entranceway. I'll talk a little later in more detail about the parking numbers. These little access roads you see, three of them that lead to these areas, those are fire access roads, so those are seen as important from a safety measure. They also would serve to allow residents, especially down in this area, a pathway to the amenities up on the northern lot. The recreation field is behind the carports. It's kind of a long, linear recreation field. It does meet the 20,000 square foot minimum size requirement. There's also a garden area, community garden area in the back, and a top lot is included, and a clubhouse up near the front. If you're familiar with the site, this is the existing home that fronts out on Old Fayetteville Road. It would be converted into a clubhouse facility. And also trash and recycling facilities here, and here. As for grading and drainage, there's as you can see from all the squiggly lines here, there's a significant amount of grading just to level out certain parts of the site and make the building sites nice and level. But all in all, it's a fairly flat site to begin with, and there's not a great deal of grade change, just some modifications to get everything in order. Stormwater facilities, there's a underground detention and underground sand filters up near Old Fayetteville Road and also near the rear of the site in this location. So all the stormwater facilities will be underground. And lighting slide doesn't show up particularly well, but over on the right you see the type of lights, and then in yellow you see the location for the lights. In all, there's not a great amount of lighting, of intense lighting proposed. Most of what you see, and they can speak to it in more detail if needed, but most of what you see is security level lighting along the pathway through the middle of the site, near the parking here, and then in the carport area. Architectural renderings, there's a condition included stating that we need to receive additional elevations, but as a sampling of the elevations, you see here what they intend to build. And now I'm going to jump into some topics, and you can refer back to the site plan and other plans if needed, as needed. First, to talk a little bit about affordable housing. The applicant has been before you on two occasions before tonight to discuss the topic, and there is a related condition included that amounts to the final proposal for the wording of that condition from the applicant. And I'm sure they're willing to discuss that if needed. Also, size-restricted units. As they wish to subdivide the property, it does, as Trish mentioned, it does become subject to all the requirements of the land use ordinance. So whereas before, when they had first come to see you to discuss affordable housing, they were just going to self-impose a 1,350-square-foot maximum size for all 39 homes, they now are required to size limit, as my bullet point shows, 10 total, 6 at 1,100 square feet, and 4, an additional 4 at 1,350 square feet. They are still self-imposing an additional 25 units at the maximum of 1,350 square feet, as previously discussed with the board. They are asking, they are asking permission for 4 of the units to not be, to be non-size limited in any particular way. Parking, I showed the parking earlier. Now I want to talk about the numbers briefly. They are asking for a slight reduction in the parking required. 69 spaces are proposed, 68 physical spaces, and they get credit for the bike racks. They get credit for one additional space. So 69 units proposed to serve 39 units. And they've included, as you'll see as an attachment in the package, justification regarding proximity to the bus stop and ability to bike downtown and things of that nature. Two bike racks are proposed, each sized to serve 17 bikes each. And there's a related condition about the parking reduction, which is kind of, if you've seen these development applications before, it's the usual language regarding a parking reduction. There's one additional condition just to briefly mention, and that's regarding the use of the carports. The land use ordinance typically requires for single-family housing that two spaces be provided per unit exclusive of spaces and garages. Now, the carports are open air, so they aren't garages per se, but they are considered structures, and we felt it was best just to include a condition to make it perfectly clear that those spaces need to be maintained for use by vehicles. The final wording of that condition, they did ask for a little flexibility to be able to store some small amounts of other stuff in their space, or a gator, if someone happens to have a gator instead of a car, one of those four-wheel vehicles, I mean by that. But ultimately, the condition does require that the 39 carport spaces be maintained as vehicular spaces. Moving on to recreation facilities now. I mentioned the, or showed you briefly the location earlier, and mentioned there's a clubhouse, a community garden, and a tot lot, and those facilities combined do exceed the required number of recreation points for the project. We typically show you, as a part of the plans, you find an image for the type and size of play facility that they want to put in place for the children. In this case, they were mulling over what they wanted to include, and ultimately, as was left at your places tonight, they included a statement in lieu of an image. Their desire is to work with someone local to build a cedar and steel structure instead of just buying out of the catalog plastic type structure. If the board's comfortable with that, there probably should be some kind of condition that, since we've received this late in the day, I don't have in front of you at this moment. But the main thrust of what the staff would propose is that it be CPSC compliant. The products you buy out of a catalog generally are. That's Consumer Protection and Safety Commission compliant. So if it is to be built by someone local, which could be seen as a good thing, but we do want it to be safe. They're also requesting permission to kind of keep a naturalized play field. The board has seen this before on at least a couple of occasions. They may note in their presentation, and I'll briefly say, just observe that McDougall's fields are just to the north of the site, and there is a land use ordinance requirement for the number of units proposed that they include with their development a play field. But their request is to leave it somewhat naturalized with some trees remaining. It still would need to be open enough that you could throw a frisbee or a ball and have some kind of pickup game. But they're asking to not be required to clear cut that field. And there was a statement included in the package regarding that, I believe. The open space for the R2 district, there's a 20% requirement versus the typical 40% requirement you're used to seeing. They're actually kind of right in the middle of that. They provided 30.7% open space. There are no primary constraints on this site, which would be something like a stream buffer or a floodplain type area. There's one wooded area, just generally wooded area, that shows up on our maps as a secondary constrained area. The ordinance does not require that be set aside as open space before any other land, but it does give the permit issuing authority the option of requiring that be set aside as common open space. They're requesting, given the nature of the site and the intensity of development on the site, they're requesting permission to encroach and disturb the secondary constrained wooded area. There's just, in fairness, there's not a ton of trees there. It's an urban developed site to begin with, but it does show up on our maps as a wooded area, so they have to make a specific request related to that. Trees and shading, there's not a ton of trees to begin with, but they would need to remove several of the trees in order to realize the plan. Regarding shading, there's been some discussion leading up to tonight regarding whether they've technically met the requirement for vehicle accommodation area shading, that is trees planted to shade asphalt areas and sidewalks, things of that nature that are created as part of the plan. And we did work out between the staff and the applicant leading into tonight's meeting that they do comply. We've essentially found that the carport areas do not necessarily need to be shaded because they're covered already. So with that in mind, they do comply with the vehicle accommodation area shading requirements. Utilities, Owassa has reviewed the plans and found them acceptable. They will review them further during the construction plan stage. Just of note, there's a septic tank, existing septic tank that's been serving the park for a number of years, and it will need to be abandoned officially and formally abandoned as a part of the redevelopment. Orange County Environmental Health has reviewed their preliminary plans to do that and found them acceptable. As well, Public Works and Orange County Solid Waste have reviewed the refuse and recycling facilities locations and found everything in order and serviceable. I already mentioned the architectural standards briefly, and there is a condition related to that. The green features, including the solar array and additional features for each home, are a part of the plans, a part of the package, and we've included a condition. Alderman Colden mentioned this by email. I believe it's number 18, if my memory is correct, regarding that the additional features and the big one that in terms of expense is the solar array, that either be installed or bonded so that the town has assurance that it will be installed eventually prior to the 26 building permit. HOA documents, they have no issue with not precluding the use of clotheslines. And just as one last detail, there's a bamboo fencing detail shown on the plans with a note that says non-opaque. There was some discussion between the staff and the applicant about how that bamboo fence will actually be constructed. And the short version of this is that when it's facing a right-of-way or essentially anywhere along the perimeter of a proposed subdivision, it cannot be opaque above 3 feet. So at this point, we have a detail and a note, and I just wanted to note that for the record. We'll work that out at the construction plan level to ensure that it's not opaque above 3 feet. I'm happy to answer questions. I'm sure Trish is as well,
I have a question.
They have a presentation as well.
Did I catch you correctly that there are some conditions that are not among the 19 in the packet that you're recommending? Is that correct? Are there additional conditions?
No, I'm sorry if I said something confusing there. But they're all here.
I thought you said there was something that only came up today or later.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the only one. I'm sorry.
Okay.
The playground, yes.
And do we have language for that?
So really, it would just be that the first question is whether the board is comfortable with the statement versus an actual image, because what you typically would see is an actual image of the playground, and you would know exactly what to anticipate seeing on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So the question for the board is whether you're comfortable with the statement versus an image. If you are, then the recommended language would just be that it be CPSC compliant that would be sufficient, I believe.
Compliant playground equipment.
Yes, CPSC compliant.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Two questions. One, normally when playground equipment's being built in new residential areas, does it have to be ADA compliant as well?
I'm unsure about that. I called Anita, our Rec and Parks Director, mm-hmm. and I don't believe she's here tonight. I called her but did not reach her earlier today to discuss this. So I'm not sure. I would just be guessing.
Okay. And my other question was, as far as parking's concerned, does the space available through the carports, is that being counted in the total of 68 parking spaces?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes.
And I have had trouble understanding the road. Does the road go all the way around? Will the road go to every house, or will people that, yeah, could you show me, please?
Oops. I'm not sure whether you saw an earlier image, but originally, and I don't know if this is the confusion, but originally the road was going to enter here, go around the back of the homes, and circle around, and then exit.
Okay.
About midway through the review, they went with this instead. So there's only one way in and out. It's sized for two-way traffic, so you enter here and exit here, and go in, park. If you're going to park along one of these parallel spaces, I guess you would have the option of just pulling in, and then when you leave, going down and turning yourself around in the T-turnaround, or turning yourself around first and then parking.
But the people on the far side in track one.
Yes. They will have a bit of a walk if that's.
So their carports, they won't have carports.
Yes, they will. There are 39 units proposed and 39 carport spaces.
Okay.
Proposed.
How will the people in track one get to their carports, get their cars to their carports?
Oh, they will have to use the one entrance exit, the one driveway, come down, park, or park in one of the other spaces, and then walk to their home site from there.
But their cars, their houses will have carports?
No, none of the homes have a carport or a driveway per se.
Okay.
It's all common area parking.
So kind of like Arcadia.
Yes.
Or Pacifica. Yeah.
Except the only assigned parking would be one space per unit within the carport areas. The rest of it would just be open parking wherever you find a space available.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yes.
Marty, I'm assuming the reason we have the clothesline condition is because we haven't passed our other ordinance yet to address it, and after that, we won't have to include that on as conditions. Is that right?
That's correct. Okay. Yes.
Marty, go ahead, Sam.
I just had a question on the recommendations by the Transportation Advisory Board. Are they reflected in the conditions, specifically the storage sheds for individual units be constructed in such a way as to accommodate multiple bicycles?
They have not been yet. The way we typically set up the sheet, and you have as an attachment the summary sheet of conditions, we have the staff recommendations and then whether the advisory boards agreed to also recommend those conditions, and then we have additional recommendations from the advisory boards, and that amounts to an additional recommendation. Actually, I believe the TAB was included in that summary sheet. Mm-hmm. The planning board is not, but I believe the TAB is.
TAB
but
and EAB.
Yeah. We typically don't modify the staff conditions as a result of what the advisory board says. We leave that up to your discretion.
I would like to see that included as a condition. Mm-hmm. That's all right with everyone else. The other question I had was, I was just wondering, of the northern play field, how many of the trees that are scheduled to be cut exist on that, especially like large trees? I looked through the plan, and there's no description of what's up there.
Yeah, perhaps the applicant could speak to that more precisely than I could. I believe some number of them, but I couldn't say with precision how many. In the past, when the board has authorized the creation of a naturalized play field, we've really done that kind of in the field with the folks on staff that have some level of expertise with regard to trees. Mm-hmm. We'll go out and have a field meeting and determine which ones should stay and which ones should go. So that's really my way of saying I don't think there's an exact number that have been determined yet to stay or go.
Right. It would be nice to be able to save some of those trees if possible. The other question was, I understand that some of the trees were going to be cut because there's an underground water cistern that is now not going to be included. And so I was wondering where that was planned to be, and if so, like what trees can be saved if it's not going to be there.
I'll allow them to speak to that.
I didn't know the cistern had been removed.
The retention area.
We're going to have to let them answer when we come up after you've been sworn in.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll just hold on that question.
Okay.
Ludy.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Two more questions, Marty. One is, do we know where the four non-size limited units are?
They've not specifically been identified yet. They would need to be on the construction plans and final plat for the record, but. They may have something in mind they can share with you, but the plans do not indicate yet.
Okay, I was just curious. And does staff have any comments about the planning board's recommendation to try to narrow the asphalt walkway to 6 feet?
I was there and heard the discussion of that. We've not had any particular level of staff discussion following that meeting about whether it's good, bad, or somewhere in the middle. Church, did you discuss it at any level when I was not in the meeting, or are you and Jeff Brubaker, have you discussed?
I guess, yeah, I guess, you know, in other words, that width is still acceptable in terms of our plan requirements.
Yes, there's no particular or specific requirement for a certain width there.
Okay.
So I guess I would say, as I mentioned earlier, we don't typically make specific recommendations about what the advisory board say, but if the board would want us to go back and bring you some specific recommendation, we could.
And it currently was set out for 8, is that right?
That's
correct.
Narrow
it to 6, just I think it was just for impervious surface, they said that night. So.
Okay. That's correct.
Okay, Jill?
Why is for condition number 18, why does the bonding process for the solar is triggered by the 26th building permit?
There's no, 26 is not a magic number. it was considered a majority. We had some discussions with the applicant leading into the preparation of the final materials that you have before you. And they can perhaps speak to this in more detail, but they anticipated approximately 25 pre-sales before the project would be financed and actually get off the ground.
Okay.
So it just seemed to me to be a fair, reasonable place to tie it down.
I was just curious.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay.
And
go ahead.
When the discussion about the CSPS tot lot.
Yes, ma'am.
How would staff ensure that it is designed to that fashion?
Typically, well, if it's a product you're buying out of a catalog, it's certified on some level.
Right.
And again, this was we received this today, earlier today, so I haven't put all that much thought into it and haven't had an opportunity to discuss it with Anita yet, but it occurred to me in thinking through it earlier today that the local companies that sometimes build out of wood versus plastic, they must cover themselves in some manner with respect to liability. I don't know whether it's CPSC certified, quote unquote, but there must be some manner in which they certify it is safe. But that's a somewhat long-winded way of saying I don't know yet.
Okay.
Like, I know that some of the equipment at Carver Elementary was built by a local guy, our share, and surely the school has a high standard for
safety. No, but I'm saying that, but where's the certification? That's my question.
Right.
That's all, because we don't, you know. Well, can I ask one?
Sure, yeah, go.
So, we don't know where the four large size units are. Do we know where the smaller size units are, the 1,100 square feet?
We do not yet. That would be denoted on the construction plans. Again, they may have that in mind, but it's not officially denoted on the plans yet.
And I guess this is a question for the attorney. Can, and I'll just share my concern with the board, but I'll ask the question first. Does the board have the authority to say where we'd not like to see them?
Well, you can certainly express your opinion, and if you wanted in the context of this meeting, they can.
Right.
They may have, as Marty said, some thoughts in mind where they will go or won't go, and the conditions, and it takes this opportunity to reemphasize that all the conditions have to be agreed upon.
Okay.
By both folks. So the board could suggest limitations or conditions or changes in the plans that they can choose to agree to or not. And if I may just expand on the answer to this extent to discuss the procedure, because of the fact that all the conditions have to be agreed upon, while the actual voting would take place in the order of the rezoning issue first and then obviously prior to the issuance or denial of the permit, you probably would want to have that discussion about permit conditions before you decide what you're going to do with the rezoning.
Okay.
Because you would not want to be in a position of both granting the rezoning and denying a permit because of lack of consensus on the conditions. So you'd want to know what the conditions are going to be if you approve the zoning before you do that.
Okay. I'll bring it up at the appropriate time.
I'm sorry.
You go ahead, because you're getting one question.
The other question I had was the way in which there's going to be more affordable housing, I guess that would be a condition we could include. And I understand that one is the under 300,000 is voluntary. Does that mean voluntary? Like, what does that mean?
Well, the pricing points they're proposing are a voluntary. There's nothing in the land use ordinance that requires any particular pricing point. So it is a voluntary action for them to bring that and agree to that or mutually agree to that with the board. So I think it really is just to suggest that it's not, land use ordinance section, it's 15- blah, blah, blah.
Well, could that be included as a condition, considering that it's something that they're volunteering?
Are you just asking whether it would be a requirement versus a voluntary action? Is that what you're saying?
I'm just wondering if they're bringing it up. Means that they're willing to have that be a condition.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, just in follow-up, if it is a condition, that means that it is, it then no longer becomes voluntary. It's something that they have agreed to and that we can ensure happens.
Right. It's conditioned.
Yeah, actually, I didn't see it. Sorry, right. Conditioned.
It's the first
good.
One.
Thanks.
Okay.
The other question I had was, you know, the parking spaces are going to be less, and I was wondering if there's a way in which we could condition that the marketing reflect this for people. I mean, the last thing people were to buy something and not realize that this is a little lower than the standard. So there's full disclosure about that.
Sure. I think you could propose a condition that requires they disclose that in some manner to the prospective buyers. And as the attorney mentioned, it would have to be a mutually agreeable condition, but it sounds reasonable.
Okay.
Did you have another follow-up, or is that it? Jackie?
I'm just having some issues with allowing less parking. You know, I talk to all kinds of people who don't believe in driving a lot. I don't drive much, but I have a car. It's my own car, and I park it. I'm just worried when we say, you know, less than two cars per unit, what it is we're setting ourselves up for and for the surrounding neighborhood for. And so that's a real... I was talking to somebody who wanted to do a development where it would be less parking, and he had already told me that his wife worked at the university, and they lived on the bus line, and I said, how's your wife get to work? And she drove, and I said, case in point, you know. So I'm a little, where I agree with the ideology, I worry about the impact on the surrounding area when we allow people to have less parking than we might reasonably expect that they need. But I'll bring that up later. But so that's why I ask if the parking, yeah. So it definitely is not two per unit.
It's not. It's they can speak to this in more detail. I think they anticipate or expect or hope for that a certain number of families would only have one car. And again, they are providing an assigned space for at least one space.
I know,
per unit.
But it's...
I understand.
I'd have to have my husband give up his truck if we moved there. That wouldn't be easy. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you're not going to live there.
I'm not going to live there.
Go ahead, Jill.
I actually have another question of staff. The 1,100 square foot, is that limited to remaining 1,100 square feet in perpetuity, or can it be added on?
1,100 square feet, and then also by ordinance, 1,350 for an additional number of them for 1 year from certificate of occupancy. In reality, they are asking to create fee simple lots, and it's conceivable that someone in the future might do some small addition to their homes, but in reality, there's not much space on the lots to add on very much.
Okay. Sammy actually raised two points that I was thinking of, and extending the sheds, is that something that if we look to make that a condition, is there any size limitation that we'd be looking at or that we specifically need to recommend?
I don't believe so, but I would request an opportunity to review it before I say with certainty.
Okay, and the second question I had, I was at the joint planning review of this, and the Environmental Advisory Board made a recommendation about planting additional deciduous trees in the area on track two, because there's open field at the schools immediately adjacent, and given that, you know, this lot not only will it have a child tot lot, it'll have a garden. Is that a great complication to actually ask for trees to be planted?
I want to remind myself, was that specifically within the
That was
recreational play area. Yes, I'm looking at it now.
Yes, yes. It's
It's not necessarily an issue. Again, much of the site is already cleared, so that would presumably be where they mean to plant additional trees. And as long as it remained open and available for, you know, a pickup game of some sort or throwing a frisbee or a ball, I think it would be acceptable. The land use ordinance does, I guess at the end of the day, the land use ordinance does require a quote-unquote recreational play field area. Exactly how that is realized is up for some interpretation. So, I'm sorry, I'm being wordy. I think the short answer is that it would be okay to require planting of some trees.
Okay.
As long as it's not too many.
Looking at the, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Jamie.
Looking at the staff recommendations, I noticed that the size-limited houses is not included as a recommendation. Is that because this is a later condition or?
The size-limited houses, I believe it's here somewhere.
Maybe I missed it.
Perhaps I just missed it when I was copying and pasting them into here.
No, it's...
Yeah, I think we should include that.
Well, the ordinance requires it.
Right.
Are you looking for it in the condition?
Oh, requires all 35 to be size limited.
Oh no,
there are four of them. Okay. Could you go back to the slide that shows 10 required? Okay, yeah, okay. So, yeah, required by ordinance. So, never mind.
Yes, and it is showing up as condition 2, which is broadly written to require compliance with 15-188.
Okay, got it.
But the other 25, though, in the blue bullet there, those are not, there's no condition.
There's not, and again, that's since it would be creating fee simple lots, it would be timely if the board desires to ask if they would self-impose or mutually agree to a permanent limitation of 1350 square feet on those.
Okay.
I don't think it's...
Because I'd assumed that was the case when I was reading it.
So. Yeah, I wouldn't anticipate an ability to do much more than 1350, but there's not a condition that limits it necessarily.
Okay. As for the accesses to pedestrian on the eastern portion, both north and south, how permanent are they? I mean, is the fact that they're drawn on there mean that they're going to be built, or is that necessary to be a condition?
Let me clarify. Do you mean the connection in this location and then off to the north?
Yeah.
This is actually just shown currently as an easement area that would be available for pedestrian and bike traffic. There's not a pathway per se proposed at this point, but they have officially declared that it would be a pedestrian and bike easement. The one to the north, they can speak to the status of this as of tonight. They're still in negotiations, as I understand, so there's nothing certain about it yet.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Let's see, we need time to hear from the applicant. George.
Should we restrict our comments to a certain amount of time?
No, because we're going to have a lot of questions for you. We don't want to limit ourselves.
All right.
Well,
no, you need to be sworn in.
I'll get your presentation up. If you can go behind me here.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the evidence you are about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
I do.
Well, this is a momentous occasion for us. We've been working on this for 3 years now. It's been 5 years since we dreamed of this happening. And so David's going to make our presentation, and it'll be a pretty concisely presented presentation. But so much effort's gone into this, and there's so many people that I feel tremendous gratitude towards. I feel a compulsion to share some of that information with you. One thing I would like you to know, that this is really not sort of a personal vision of mine. It really is a creation of the community. There were so many things that had to happen in order for this community to be created. It's unbelievable. And I just wanted to mention some of the people that were involved. For one, I do want to thank the Board of Aldermen. before I even moved to Carrboro, I had an opportunity to live anywhere I wanted in the United States, and I felt that Carrboro was one of the best places I could possibly live in this whole country. And I don't live in town per se because my partner and I wanted to have an animal sanctuary outside of town, but my social circuit, my businesses have always been here, and I've always felt great kinship with Carrboro, and you created the environment where this community can work. It wouldn't work in many other communities in America because people wouldn't value the things that we're offering, and we feel that this is a magnificent model of the way we need to change as a society to move towards this kind of sustainable development. It's not absolutely perfect, but it's a huge move in the right direction, and we're very proud of it. I also want to thank the board. Early on, this board loaned me the money to open my store, Earthwares, and it was at Earthwares where I learned about all the sustainability things that I now know of and we've incorporated into this community. And I also have to say that the only real, the affordable housing thing has been an issue with the board, and also the price was an issue with the board. And I wanted to say that originally I wasn't happy about the board suggesting that we cap our price under $300,000. I didn't feel that it was something that should be dictated to me, but I have to thank you for that because after thinking about that for a few months, I really feel that was the right decision, and we've been happy to hold the line on the price to make them as affordable as they can be. I'm also really grateful to Mark Chilton, who has provided us with a lot of wise counsel during the creation of the community, and he properly recused himself so that he could help us in a lot of different ways. He had some really key insights for us. I want to thank so many people, but I can't. But one person that I really want to thank is Mike Bro, because Mike, from the very beginning, has been a voice of reason. And it's been really, there have been these critical moments during the process where no one really knew how to proceed because the code doesn't get down to the detail of what we need to decide in a community like this. And Mike always had a wise answer for people that was acceptable so we could move forward. Also want to thank the staff, Marty and Trish in particular. Marty and Trish, thank you very much. I don't know whether you are. Originally, they felt like adversaries, but as they got to know us and got to know the process, what I really liked about working with the staff is instead of just saying no to us, like a lot of people will say to you, they would say no, but have you thought about this? You can try that or whatever. So thank you very much for helping us get through the process. Giles Blunden is a visionary architect. Right now he's out camping out of the hatchback of his car out west with his wife. But we actually didn't design this community. It's Giles Blunden's design, and Giles is a wonderful architect. His two communities, as you know, Arcadia and Pacifica, have been highly desirable communities that people love. And everything about the community is really Giles' design. Also have to thank the Bell family, Richie and Ann Bell over here, at a segment of their lives, and sort of the golden year portion of their lives, when many people are concerned about their security, in the worst economy of the last 50 years and in the worst housing market of the last 50 years, they believe so strongly in this green model of development that they totally, went down on it. And I'm totally grateful to them because without them, it wouldn't have happened. The neighbors, also, I want you to know, were important in this. Neighbors could have nixed easements that we had to have in order for this community to happen. Chuck James is sitting in the back of the room. He's one of the neighbors that's offering to provide a pedestrian easement so that we can make this into a truly pedestrian, bike-friendly community where people will be able to get to town, just travel a mile to town. And without his cooperation, we couldn't do that because the other easement is a hope in the future, but right now it goes to nowhere. We can't really do it across the existing property that's there. So thanks to them for that and also for allowing us to take care of our stormwater runoff and all that. George Reschle of Ballantyne Engineering has done an amazing job. This was an extremely tight site, and it's been very difficult to offer all of the amenities that we offer. And, for example, things like parking. We don't have two per home, but we have much more parking than we do right now as a trailer park. And there are many other amenities that we have It had to be ironed out by George because it's down to the inch, and there's so many overlays from the regulatory bodies and from the infrastructure that it's an extremely difficult puzzle to work out, and they did an excellent job of figuring that out for us. And finally, I want to thank Sungate as well. When I went into the process, I was concerned that Sungate would be overly difficult for us because we had such an unusual situation going on. But I have to say that thank you, Will. Sungate was reasonable. They never withheld their consent unreasonably to anything that we wanted to do, and that was a big relief because we couldn't really afford to go through a huge protracted struggle with Sungate over our project. So thank you, everybody, that made it possible. Now I'm going to let David's going to take over the formal presentation. Yeah.
I just want to primarily fill in some gaps, I guess, that would be left by the presentations by Marty and Trish. Predominantly, there is a long history associated with the trailer park in conjunction with the court ruling that essentially gives it its established density. I'll just start from basically when Sustainable Properties took over the property, which was in 2006. I do want to clarify that the initial intent with the property was actually to run it as a going concern. It was not purchased as a development opportunity, and in fact, when it was purchased, there were no clear development rights associated with the project. Those had to be ironed out, essentially, down the line. Initially, the park was purchased, and a significant amount of money was put into the kitty, essentially, to attempt to update and upgrade infrastructure and enable the park to be run, in an ongoing way. This essentially proved to be unviable in the long term. The primary reason for that is simply the deferred maintenance that had been accumulated in the park, rather haphazard configuration of combination of sewer septic systems and Owassa, basically inlets that, after being in the ground essentially for 50 years, began to slowly implode, as it's now sort of reaching the end of its functional life. The primary issue is that although there may be the conception that, the trailer park is desirable, affordable housing, it certainly is some of the cheapest housing currently available in the market, it is essentially unsustainable for a couple of reasons. The primary one on our end is that the maintenance expenses are prohibitive. It's been run at a loss essentially for 4 years running now, the last two and a half of which have only been because there is a development opportunity now in the works that is essentially allowing that cost overrun to be subsidized. The second part of the lack of sustainability in the park is actually borne by the tenants and comes in the form of the fact that these trailers are 30-plus years old, some 40-plus, and are extremely thermally inefficient. So in the harsher months, especially in the winter and summer, climate controlling them is extremely difficult and an extremely expensive proposition for the tenants at the park. The only permanent solution to these issues would be a replacement of the infrastructure both above and below ground. That was actually the first option that was explored in the order of events leading up to essentially this development proposal. It was essentially deemed to be unviable. The expense of replacing all of the underground infrastructure in conjunction with replacing all of the trailers would necessitate rents at a rate that basically defeat the purpose of going that route due to the fact that it wouldn't be affordable to anyone at the park. It would probably be inviable to get a loan to do it in the first place due to the fact that there isn't a market for trailers at that rental level that would be necessitated. The second potential that was explored before essentially reaching this was to condominiumize the park and empower the residents as homeowners while essentially paying for the upgraded infrastructure that would be necessary to make it a viable going concern. Notices were sent out. We attempted to include people in that process, and there was literally zero response from any of the tenants at the park, and it was also determined that essentially even if they were interested, it's unlikely that the credit and capacity basically to realize that would be viable. So for those combinations of reasons, that was also put aside. That is the point at which it was decided that the development track was the appropriate track for this parcel, really, at that point, the only track. And that's when we sort of shifted into basically discussions with the town, a very long interchange between town planning and TRIP at that point in regards to the development capacities of the site. It was confirmed that this site has 39, or the southern site, I should say, has 39 should actually go. Has 39, the capacity to do 39 units. The northern site would be considered separate if developing under the grandfathered rights, and also has the capacity to do 4 units of any size without any permitting. The thing about the grandfathered rights was that they would enable us to have moved forward with the development without any public review or really any of the town review bodies weighing in on the proposal, in conjunction with the fact that it is actually higher density than the proposal that we've brought forth, would certainly have been a potentially profitable development scenario. But ultimately, due to the fact that the configuration would have been extremely tight and there would have been an extreme lack of solar access, as well as the fact that the driveway would have necessarily gone down the middle of the road in conjunction with another drive that would have had to have been supplied with along the northern lot, the whole thing would have basically been asphalt and houses and just not the type of community that we wanted to realize. So we did decide in 2008 to scrap that idea and come before you guys late in 2008 to discuss this possibility, the project that we've spent the last 2.5 years developing, as an alternative to that, as a way to provide, you know, relatively affordable, sustainable housing that, you know, you really aren't going to find anywhere else in town. I say, you know, affordable because we do believe that it is legitimately affordable. If you look at the other types of housing and the cost of especially new construction, detached homes in Chapel Hill and Carborough, the average price is actually about $470,000. If you isolate just for Carborough, it goes up to $525,000 for a new detached home in the area. We're proposing to offer homes for less than $300,000 with over $20,000 in sustainability features included. So upon essentially crunching the numbers and determining that that was a feasible option, that's when we came before the board and essentially asked for your blessing in taking the approach of this market-driven affordability as opposed to what you could essentially relate to a sort of tax and gift strategy wherein large homes are built with high profit margins, density is increased, and then those profits go to subsidize homes that are sold for below cost to afford, you know, essentially build the affordable housing stock. We knew from the very beginning that that wasn't going to be possible for us to achieve. We were upfront about it, and we asked in late 2008, you know, basically whether or not it would be feasible for us to proceed under this plan, and we essentially were given positive signals at that point and have proceeded under that assumption. The main thing that I'd like to go through just briefly are the differences. This is an aerial photograph of the area. So in our plan, as opposed to the old plan, we have essentially recombined the northern lot and been able to offer a lot more amenities to the southern lot as opposed, because developing it under the essentially grandfathered rights would have kept the road in the exact same place and just done a one-for-one replacement straight down. Same on the northern lot, road, and, you know, just houses directly in a row. What we are proposing instead is to have a pedestrian commons down the middle, try to maximize bike and pedestrian access and encourage use of bike and pedestrian amenities by regulating traffic to the north of the site. That's extremely intentional. The traffic is relegated to the exterior of the site, and we actually, you know, are really happy with the setup that cars are largely isolated from the community, and the community is centered on green space, garden space, pedestrian, and bike orientation. There are two primary things that we're really asking for from the board. One is a conditional use permit, which is necessitated by the fact that we are moving this driveway up under the northern lot. That is what constitutes a material change of use. That's why we're basically in this process. And essentially the whole purpose of that is to be able to offer this type of community, a pedestrian and bike-oriented community. The second thing that we've sort of added on later in the process as the market has developed and we've sort of come to realizations about what was going to be feasible and infeasible in terms of bringing this project to realization is the rezoning. And I would like to comment that with the rezoning, we really aren't getting anything beyond what we got in our grandfathered rights. We're just putting down lot lines around the homes. There's a lot of things that are opened up by the rezoning, but due to the fact that this is a conditional use rezoning and not a blanket rezoning, everything that's on the site is required to be built this way, as shown in the plans, and so there isn't going to be any variation. There isn't any utilization of additional density. In fact, the density is less than what we're allowed in our grandfathered statuses. And So it really is all about getting them zoned as fee simple lots. And the reason for that is simply the financing of it. Well, there are some new realities in the market right now, and one of the big ones is that it's extremely hard to qualify for home loans. And the bigger the pool of mortgage money that you can access, the better. And the biggest pool is for fee simple lots. The long and short of it is that having them on fee simple lots will allow people of less income to afford these homes. It's not that they could not be sold as condos, it's possible, but they would have to be significantly overqualified for the loan in order to get it, simply because of the way the financial sector is at this moment in time. So those are basically the only two things we're asking for directly. There's a lot of stuff that's been basically brought up by the fact that we've taken a site with a lot of non-conforming issues, existing non-conformities that are allowable and could continue under the grandfathered rights, that we did correct as a result of pursuing this rezoning and this conditional use permit. There's really too many to list directly, but basically it's been bringing everything into compliance. So the plan that is right here is fully in compliance. It has open space, you know, the play field, all the recreation points, the amenities, the access, you know, the appropriate setbacks, lot line setbacks, you know, you name it. It's all, we basically put all of that in. And that has been a significant increase in our basis. So that there's been basically a lot of cost added to the project that we have basically enveloped and will hopefully be able to offset through pretty strong pre-sales of the units, which is a large reason for the exact phrasing of the first condition that we're basically imposing on ourselves in regards to affordability, is keeping ourselves basically able to make this project happen by hopefully garnering a large number of people who are willing to commit early and reduce risk and allow us to get the funding that we need to move forward. So just want to go through briefly. This is a rendering of the site that aligns now with the current site plan. We are offering a lot of sustainability features. That really is the big thing. That's the large reason why we're here before the board, is because we wanted to do this site in a way that would allow us to realize our vision for this development. And this vision, you know, includes a lot of things that you really do not find in standard developments for a reason. They're a little bit difficult to do. A lot of people don't understand them. And it is a bit of a marketing challenge to get out there and explain to people why these things cost justify. But there will be a 100-kilowatt photovoltaic array on the northern lot, a vegetable garden that will be community-based and will allow everyone to grow their own, you know, fresh local produce, a pedestrian common centered around individual garden spaces that exemplify, you know, pedestrian access and bike access to the newly updated Olfayville Road, which does have bike lanes on both sides and that connect to the overall bike network in Carborough. A bus stop, which runs the F line, will allow residents to easily hop on to the free bus system in Chapel Hill. Solar thermal systems, standard on every home. A number of things have been added in: rainwater capture and reuse, as well as extensive third-party certifications that, you know, we will attain by including numerous green features, you know, added insulation, low-flow fixtures, recyclable flooring and interior components, energy-efficient appliances, HVAC, green construction techniques. Basically, you know, all of the things that, you know, ultimately will cost us fine, will set this community apart, and will, I think, give Carborough a chance to basically set itself apart in terms of the court, you know, encouraging this type of development and, you know, being something that you can point to and basically say, you know, this is the type of, you know, features, these are the types of things that we want to see. And, you know, not coincidentally, I do think, you know, the project has been picked up by, you know, national media outlets already. It's been pointed to basically as an example of the type of thing that Carborough is trying to foster. And I do think that, you know, it would be a great opportunity essentially for Carborough to realize this community as opposed to, you know, alternative development scenarios. I do want to comment as well on the affordability issue. The green features that we're including are going to significantly reduce the total cost of the homes in terms of the total cost of ownership. The total cost of ownership is an ongoing figure. Almost nobody pays cash for a home. Everybody purchases a home, they get a mortgage, they have a monthly payment, and that monthly payment essentially, as compared to their income, determines how affordable that home is for them. Now, there is a program, the Energy Efficient Mortgage Program, that's currently in effect that will allow people to utilize the savings that they will incur by having all these features in their home and apply that to their qualification amounts for the loans that they can get. In effect, this allows people that would ordinarily only be able to qualify for a roughly $285,000 loan to go ahead and qualify for the full $300,000. And in conjunction with the fact that the total monthly savings are actually higher than the added principal and interest cost, that makes the home in every single way just as affordable and actually costs less to own than a $285,000 home. So it's significant. I mean, it's a very significant savings in addition to the environmental benefits of, you know, utilizing these features. So anyway, I think that is about it. I mean, we really believe in this plan. I mean, we've spent a lot of time and effort. We've spent, you know, a significant amount of money doing the engineering and trying to realize this. We've done all of this while having a completely viable alternative development scenario, and we've done it because we really do believe in this community and in what it can offer Carrboro, and we believe in the types of things that we offer, and, you know, basically the vision that the town has laid out for the way in which it wants to be developed. So we hope that you guys can appreciate the benefits that this plan has as opposed to the alternative, and understand that we really have put in everything that we thought possible in order to make this happen. And the areas in which we do have to draw the line are simply the ones in which we actually feel it would really make it impossible for us to build out. Because if we have an approval for a project we can't build, it really doesn't help anybody. That's all I got.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Tripp.
I've got a number of questions.
Okay.
What are the estimated costs of the solar array maintenance? Because I assume the Homeowners Association will be bearing those costs.
Right. The solar array is going to be a net metering system wherein all of the electricity generated by the array is going to be sold back to the utility and then provided to the homes afterwards. So the electricity will pass over onto the grid side of the meter.
I understand, but how is it going to be maintained if something goes wrong? The Homeowners Association is going to be required to maintain the solar array.
Yes, and it will also be getting all of the income from the array, which will be very much in excess of the amount that's required to maintain it.
So how much is that going to be?
How much will the array produce in income?
Mm-hmm.
It depends on exactly what the rate is. The total production would be in the range of 135,000 kilowatt hours per year. So you can basically say that that's about $13,000 per year at 10 cents per kilowatt hour.
Okay.
However, it's possible that we would be able to negotiate a higher rate. There are green development mechanisms that would allow us to get up to 18 cents a kilowatt hour. And that's significant. I mean, that would push the income up to over $20,000 a month.
And so you're indicating that the maintenance is going to be less than what it produces.
Definitely, yeah.
Okay.
They're very low maintenance.
Yeah, she wants to ask.
Just a follow-up. So is part of your homeowner's going to be to have that just go into some kind of trust account where then it's kind of used to offset the maintenance costs?
Right. The idea is basically that income will offset Homeowners Association dues. So all the expenses of the Homeowners Association will be put into a pool. All of this money will be put into the pool, and then the marginal difference between those two will be the amount that everyone is assessed in Homeowners Association fees. So they will basically realize it in terms of not having to pay as much as they would normally have to pay for Homeowners Association dues.
And my second question is, I reviewed the packet and indicated that all of the homes will have porches.
They'll all have patios,
porches. I'm asking a specific question. It's a little different between a patio and a porch.
I think they do have porches. Isn't it what it says in the architectural?
That's what it says, so I want to clarify, because I'm going to my next.
Yeah, this would be a good one for...
I think they do all have porches.
Yeah. They all, so, yeah. Okay. Because
there's a difference. I got a patio and a porch.
There is. My assumption was that they would be patios. I think that the capacity zone is that these patios are counted as impervious surface, and they are also set back the same amount as a building has to be from the lot lines. So covering a patio would be a very easy thing and could be easily offered. But I believe at the price we're offering them, we are just doing patios.
Okay. So then... The reason why I'm asking the question is because where were you going to locate the 1,100 square foot?
Well, the 1,100 square foot are these long ones.
Mm-hmm.
So there's four of the long ones shown. And we are actually in an ongoing discussion with the town that will have to be resolved by the construction drawing phase as to whether or not we will be siting an additional two of these or have a different footprint. And, you know, we will identify exactly, you know, which section, which ones it will be. We aren't adverse to this, although we do think the fact that we do have 31 units at 1,350 square feet is pretty significant in terms of the overall size limitation and the affordability as a result of the homes.
Now, I'm not asking for, I'm not asking in terms of limiting the, or asking for an additional size.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, size limited structures. I'm asking, are they going to be interspersed
and, they are. Yeah.
And not ghettoized in just one section together?
No, I mean, these are all 1,350. The 1,100 square foot are already, like, very much in the middle. I mean, that one is on the periphery. The biggest, and that's actually one of the most desirable places to be because it's tucked in the back and it's away, you know, from the traffic. At least that's, you know, the type of place I'd like to be in. It doesn't have anyone on that side of them. But the reality of the way in which these units are configured is that it's effectively the only way they can fit.
Right.
And Charles Blunden uses this kind of staggering of different designs to create variation so that when you walk down the center of the community, it doesn't look like a monolithic structure.
Would you accept that as a condition, that those units not be?
Yeah, they're going to be exactly where you see them.
The four that are...
But we can write that in as a condition.
Yeah,
for sure. Okay.
Yeah.
My next question is, in the condition that's agreed to, condition number one, you talk about that the buyers must meet the qualified buyer lending requirements of the financial institution that's funding the project to develop.
Right.
So, for example, what if someone could get a better deal with financing?
With another bank.
I'm not saying a fly-by-night. I'm saying, like, for example, a credit union.
Right. That was the intent, really, of that language. The intent wasn't to pigeonhole people into using that bank. It was just to basically state that as part of the pre-qualification process, deposit process, they will have to have their credit run, and if they aren't going to be able to qualify for the loan, then the bank is not going to consider that essentially a pre-sale, and that is the basically litmus test that they have to be able to pass. I would be fine with the language change that would basically state that they can provide proof that they will be able to obtain permanent financing on it at the end. I don't see any problem with that.
This actually doesn't say that they have to get financing from your bank.
Right.
It just says they have to be qualified by your bank.
Right. I would say that, I mean, banks' qualification metrics are pretty consistent. So
I'm going to throw an example. You could probably get a better deal at a credit union than you can at a commercial bank, depending on what kind of financial tool you want to finance to purchase your house. And I think if you want people who are probably going to be making between $120 and $150 or more dollars, $1,000, to purchase in this, because typically the standard is 2.5 times your gross income. So that makes it $120,000 by $300,000 by 2.5. They may be working at the university and may be members of the state employees credit union, which may give them a better deal over the long run.
Yeah, we won't have any problem with
that. We're fine with that.
Okay. So I'd like some slight modification of the language on number one there. And then my last question is, what's happening to the people that already live there?
That's a good question. Basically, our plan is, and a lot of this is dependent on this overall scheduling in terms of obtaining financing and being able to move forward on the project, but we will give them as much notice as possible. My guess is that that will be probably 3 to 4 months. We will then help them basically offer relocation assistance. The initial plan was to offer anybody that wanted wanted it, their trailer. They could have their trailer. Some people have invested some money in fixing it up on the interior, and we want them to be able to retain that. They would have to find a place to move it. I'm not going to make any statement as to, like, how, you know, viable or where, you know, that would be, but they will be given the option. People that elect not to take that option, we will be providing them their first month's rent, you know, wherever they're going, and essentially give them recommendation, try to help find places that are close to where they work, and really proactively essentially help relocate them and get them on their feet in a new location. The hope is that, you know, this can be a positive thing, you know, for everybody, that, you know, nobody leaves feeling, you know, like they've been gypped. Ultimately, you know, it is a difficult process to have to move, but it is certainly going to be a much easier and, you know, more gracious process for people in the event of, you know, the realization of this project, as opposed to, you know, having to shut down the park due to insolvency. So, you know, we're basically going to be stepping up to the plate in every reasonable way to help the tenants that have been in the park and have been, you know, on top of their commitments and, you know, and fulfilling their end of the lease, basically.
I'm done.
All right, Lydia.
Yeah, I have two or three questions to ask you. One is about the bicycle parking. I mean, I know there's a couple of the outdoor ones for visitors and so on, and then there's the enclosed, or there's the ability for the owners of the lots, of the houses on the lots, to be able to park their bikes in their, I guess, carport area.
Right.
Is that and well, have you considered these comments by the boards to how much room could there be in there for them, for each house, to have their own bikes in there?
Yeah, the thing that was discussed at the joint review meeting actually didn't pertain to the carport spaces themselves, although we do anticipate that there will be plenty of room at the front end of those spaces to put your bike. That said, they're open structures, so the security might be somewhat of an issue. Our real concept is that there will essentially be sheds associated with each home that will be, you can lock, and will be a very secure, you know, good place to put bikes. One of the recommendations at the joint review was in conjunction with ensuring that there was adequate space in them to store a certain number of bikes. We thought about that a bit, and you know, we don't want to grossly oversize them for, you know, the, you know, rare exception of somebody that wants to store like 6 or 8 bicycles in their shed. Mm-hmm. But we do understand that, you know, it would not be uncommon at all to have 2 or 3 bikes that you would want to store in there. And we're prepared to size them adequately, particularly if vertical storage is, you know, optional to hold at least 3, potentially 4 bikes.
So are these storage areas for each unit, are they actually physically located in the carport base?
No.
Are they located on each person's?
Yeah, they're on each lot. They're shown here sort of separately as this, because this was mocked up from the site plan, which is based on making sure the impervious surface is all accounted for. But basically, they will be tucked up against the homes, and in certain circumstances in which it might not be possible just because of the way the homes are configured, they'll be integrated into fencing systems that will be going around the homes, and so they will tie in. And they will be extremely accessible from the house. They will either be directly affixed to it or just a few feet away from it on the fencing line.
Okay, I'm not sure if Damon from the planning board, or if I'm saying that right, but their condition, or the recommendation the planning board said specifically, was each applicant ensure each storage area in the carport bays be large enough to accommodate at least 2 bicycles. So either the planning board understood it a little differently, or maybe they're suggesting...
Yeah, they made that wrong. They should have said sheds.
Okay. Considering where the people park their cars, just kind of thinking through if there's a way that someone could hang their bike, you know, on the wall or something, or on the post right where their car comes in, or some other imaginative way to maybe have another spot where you could hang your bike in case you needed to use your storage shed for other things. That's my thought, and I don't know if Damon will want to comment.
Well, and I think that the my recollection is that the planning board was talking about maybe using some space in the carport, but the Transportation Advisory Board was talking about modifying the size of the sheds to accommodate multiple bikes.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
One more thing I want to say, Jackie, about the parking is that the Transportation Advisory Board, I think it was, suggested that there are going to be some people that don't have two cars or that don't even have one car, and they would sell to the Homeowners Association the use of their carport, which could then be rededicated, right?
Yeah, let me clarify. The ownership of the carports will be assigned to each unit in perpetuity. However, we do think it's reasonable to offer people in the circumstance that they don't have a car, which is certainly possible, to basically rent the space to the HOA. And our hope is to establish a car sharing program essentially in the site. Our goal really is to encourage people to have one car, and we understand that many people won't and will want to have two cars, and we think that will be doable, provided that there's, incentive structure and there's flexibility incorporated that allows folks to, use their carport spaces for communal purposes, use flex spaces, and utilize car sharing programs for people that don't always need two vehicles but situationally need an additional one.
Okay. Two more points. One is the asphalt walkway. The planning board wanted to, reduce it from 8 feet to 6 feet. Mm-hmm. You were there for the discussion trip. Is there any reason why you would not agree with that if the rest of the board wants to have that be one of the conditions?
No, I actually couldn't even remember why.
We like 6 feet better.
Yeah, 6 feet is better.
Okay.
So we're fine with that.
And then the third one is this matter of the tot lot area. If we have some kind of a condition that says we're fine with a play area that's evocative of our youth, that if we have it meet whatever similar safety type standards that are out there pursuant to recreation parks current standards, is that agreeable then?
No problem.
Yeah.
I mean, the easy thing to do is just put some plastic junk out there, but we want to do better than that. So we'll definitely not want to create any legal liabilities for homeowners associations. So we will be absolutely sure to make sure that it meets whatever tot area certification is necessary.
Great. Okay. Thanks.
Joel, did you have something?
Oh,
Jackie.
I'm just checking out.
Two things. What happened to the cistern?
Well, okay. This was an evolution essentially that occurred over about 6 months after the very first meeting. In which Giles did essentially his due diligence on the cistern design and, essentially researched folks that were going to be able to implement it. Effectively, what he found, and he was very adamant that we not include underground cisterns. Tripp and I actually desired to keep them. The primary issue with underground cisterns, and I would like to clarify, we're going to have above-ground cisterns associated with each home as well as the carport structure, so there will still be rainwater retention and reuse, is a conjunction of the spacing in between the homes and just not having a viable enough amount of space to ensure that they won't be breached during construction or, any of the various other issues, as well as an ongoing maintenance concern that it would prevent basically be an extremely difficult long-term...
Two more issues is we could not find a contractor that had any experience installing this kind of a residential rainwater catchment system. There was none, so we were having to meet with plumbers to see if they could implement the system. And then finally, it was like brand new out of the regulatory DER or whatever, and so it was such a cloudy, murky area. So many implementation problems and such space problems that Giles said, "You guys, I just cannot stand behind this as your architect. I cannot recommend you do this."
I know the university has several that were recently put in, but that's on an institutional level. My concern with the parking is that a year from now, you're going to need to come back and say, we're finding that as much as we wanted it to be, that the limitation on the number of parking spots is affecting the marketability of the units. And in order to be able to pre-sell our units, we're going to need to ask to have more parking. I think we've had several instances where things that people wished were marketable ended up not being as marketable as they wished that they would. And I think that particularly in such a tight housing market, that people will say, oh, honey, I really, really like that, but I don't want to make you give up your car, you know, because it's always going to be honey that's going to give up their car, not you.
So,
in your house, that's right. So I'm a little concerned that you're going to run up against that and come back and say, we need to increase the parking. And I guess what you would do then would be move your garden or something. But I hope that's not true, but I have a feeling that you might come in another 6 months and ask for a change because you can't sell them with only one parking spot. So the first people that buy them, they get two?
No. Everybody gets one assigned spot, and then the remainder are flex spots. And
okay.
We do have to determine, this will be a potential issue that the HOA would have to address, you know, down the line. But we essentially would like it structured such that there is a disincentive to having an additional car beyond the first one. And, you know, as I said, I do think there is a very strong potential that through the use of car sharing programs, as well as the fact that this whole community really is oriented around these public transport and bike and pedestrian connectivity.
It's not that I don't get it, and it's not that I don't understand these principles, because I certainly do. I'm just kind of looking at the reality and some things that have happened in the community lately where people thought that something would really, really sell because it was really, really green and it didn't. I'm just worried that I hope you don't, but I can see where that might happen. I'm also a little concerned because we're going to get a request at some point for reduced parking in an area that probably isn't as
accessible.
It's actually more accessible, but I worry about the precedent that it sets.
Well, this is the one area where we were not able to bring a non-conforming situation perfectly up to code. We just couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So we did the best we could.
Right. I mean, the F doesn't run on Sundays. It has limited service the rest of the week. I'm just worried that a year from now you're going to say, we're not selling them, and what we're hearing from people is that they want more parking.
Well, I'm bringing it into perspective. It's only 10 spaces, real spaces shy. I would personally be pretty surprised if there weren't 10 people who couldn't do without the second car in the entire community.
Or 10 single households.
Right, or people that live by themselves or with only one driver, you know. But, I certainly see what you're saying. I do think, I guess that would really be the only additional place to put parking unless we wanted to push the trees back and add some more in the front. I mean, there's a lot of site issues that really George would have to speak to more than I in terms of expanding the impervious surface and what is under, you know, those spaces. But I think that, I guess that's really more our risk, you know, to take that it can't be marketed.
Will the lack of a traditional number of units of parking, will that affect the financing for the homeowners at all?
No.
No. Okay.
Lydia, just to follow up on what Jackie's saying, because I think she does make a good point, and we all recognize what we want to achieve here, and it is, you know, something that you'll have to kind of see how it goes. It almost does seem like to have everyone have one and then have the others kind of up for grabs is a little, that would be a little disconcerting to a family that came in with two. It almost does seem like you're better off to try to sell to the family or to the seniors or to the students or to the people, graduate students or whatever, that know they only need one and offer the possibility of two up to a certain number of houses. And at some point you get to a point where the only ones that are left might just be one. But I do think it could end up, you know, becoming something to play with, even though it's only 9 or 10 spaces. But, you know, if you do go hit your senior market, you're talking about two, but a lot of seniors might just have one car also. So
Just to clarify on this point, is this something that we would have to come back to the board about, adding additional parking, if we have the impervious surface for it? Like,
if it would change the site plan, yes. I mean, I think
it would change the site.
I think what Jackie was talking about was that you would be wanting to come back to If your question is, would you need to get board approval to change the site plan to add additional parking, the answer would be yes.
Okay. Well, I mean, all I can really, I guess, say to this, it's interesting. It's almost like you guys are advocating for us on this point. But, you know, yeah, you know, we feel pretty confident that, you know, this model can work and that we, you know, want to basically discourage. I mean, the whole point, really, of doing it in this way and having the center of the community be pedestrian and bike-oriented was to downplay the importance of the car in this community. And that's the target market that we're going for. That's going to be the tone of the advertising. It's going to be accentuating the, you know, connectivity possibilities with it absent motor vehicle transport. And I would hope that it's at least effective enough to get 10 people who can have one car.
What? Do you know, did Giles limit parking in a similar way at Arcadia and Pacifica?
He mentioned just anecdotally that not, you know, they had all these assigned spots and carports and that people didn't want them. They didn't even use them. You know, they didn't want to pay for them. And they didn't, you know, it just wasn't utilized. So he certainly thought actually, I think, less parking than this was would be fine. We actually added those spaces there because we felt like it would be good to have some visitor, you know, parking.
I think it was really brave of y'all to do that, and thinking of this community as one that can kind of lead the way and maybe set precedent for to show that it is viable to do something like this is very important. So, and y'all are taking that risk on. That's what I mean, is like the bravery of it. So I appreciate that. You know, I think it's cool to also have. I understand the homeowner association would be renting the secondary spaces, and that is that correct?
Right. Basically, the situation would be that there was a request to have the potential to dissociate carport spaces from the units, basically on the precedent that there were these situations that were coming up where people didn't have a car and didn't want a carport and didn't want to pay for a carport. For the sake of, you know, order, we did want to have, you know, a unit assigned to each space, and so in recognition of basically the fact that some people might not want that space, we do think it's reasonable to give them the opportunity to rent it to the HOA, make sure that the space is utilized. Those would be the types of spaces that would be available to people that definitely are going to need two cars and, you know, might want to put one in there. Mm-hmm. We obviously can't speak to whether or not, you know, what the number.
And for me, this is just another... I mean, it's very a big conflict for me, the fact that this is replacing an affordable space, but this is one more mitigating way in which someone who can't afford so much may be able to make some income because there may be that need in this community for another car. And, you know, people with low income already struggle with transportation anyway, so this would be a way in which to offset that. The other thing I like that mitigates is the way in which the solar panel, the money generated from it, goes into the homeowner association. And so that's another lesser cost. And then also that mortgage program, I think, is really valuable. All these things are great, and I commend y'all for it, for like identifying them. And I think that they serve as an example for us as a community, perhaps to think creatively in perhaps zoning areas so that we could have higher density, even smaller houses, maybe at the size of your small houses here, and requiring solar panels on the roof as a way to offset the mortgage or rent that people have to pay, and the utility bills that they would otherwise pay. I just had a question about the cistern that y'all are y'all going to have above ground cisterns, and at what size will they be, and kind of where would they be located?
They haven't been fully spec'd out. We would want to get extremely large, basically, cisterns in conjunction with the carport spaces that would be adequate to catch as much rain as possible.
Oh, cool.
For use in gardening, you know, for the vegetable garden and general landscape irrigation. As far as the size of the units that will be part of the homes, it will probably be just an oversized, you know, rain barrel, basically set up.
And so as part of the description of why, meaning the cut trees, it was said that the underground cistern was one of those. Are there trees that can be saved now? Because
it was actually the underground retention that we were referring to, which is the stormwater control devices on the northern lot. We basically, our proposal is that, you know, we do have this playfield area in the top. This top part, which was kind of sad because that top part was really the only place where it was going to be feasible to save any trees. So we were basically asking permission for a natural playfield set up wherein we could try to retain as many of those trees as possible. That said, we are showing and have basically made the statement that all of those trees are going to be removed, and the reason for that is that we just can't be sure what the impact on root structures is and, you know, whether or not, you know, they'll be able to survive. But our attempt is going to be to save as many trees as possible on the northern lot, and we will certainly erect the barriers and make a good faith effort to save them.
We don't want to cut trees down on the northern lot.
Yeah.
Does our ordinance require that space? My understanding is that it has to be open to throw a frisbee, maybe not worded in that way, but I mean, I don't want our ordinance to prevent the saving of trees, because it sounds like a lot of the bigger trees are on that spot.
In our opinion, the ordinance, in our opinion, needs to be updated to reflect the new sustainability development realities, which would be, instead of stipulating a playfield, it would be better if you stipulated a natural area.
Nope.
In our opinion.
Well before we discuss that, hold on, excuse me, because he hadn't been on the board as long as we have. The reason why we have a requirement to provide recreation is because the town itself cannot afford to provide the recreation that's necessary. And so this was a compromise, a long-standing compromise. To say natural area will not necessarily provide the recreation that's necessary for the children and the youth that are growing up in this community.
Right.
Because we have a dearth now.
2 points. Recreation or nature deficit disorder is a big problem in our society, and recreation perhaps could be seen. I remember playing in the forest and enjoying it very much.
I don't play in forest.
Some of us do.
We're getting off track.
But the other point is if you don't like playing in the forest and you like fields, this site is very special in that it's right next door to the middle school.
That's true.
Within walking
right.
distance.
And I think that was said before, that there are immediate open fields
right.
adjacent to the property.
So I feel it would be valuable to make sure that we're not preempting the saving of trees on that lot, if we could make this exemption for this project.
And that correlates with what the Environmental Advisory Board, I think it was that board that made the recommendation about planting, not only retaining the trees that are there, but additionally planting other deciduous trees. So
what we would do is we would go ahead and do that. And then, we would go ahead and save as many of these trees as can be saved. And then your guys would come out, somebody from the town would monitor the situation and advise us as to whether or not we could plant additional trees, and, you know, where. Whatever the regulatory body is that checks in on us.
I'm looking at Marty.
Yes, I think we're all hopefully on the same page as it moves forward, if approved. Just for the record, the language reads, a relatively flat, well-drained, grassed, and otherwise well-suited for use as a playfield, and configured in such a manner to be useful as a playfield. So it doesn't explicitly speak to whether there can or cannot be a tree there. You know.
Okay.
I mean, I think that the grass and all those things that it's trying to accomplish, again, it's redundant given that this is so close to the middle school, and that it would be valuable to try to retain a forest without necessarily having the grass.
Okay, so Dan.
Yeah, since all my colleagues have done such a good job asking questions and coming up with the additional conditions we need, I'm just going to take a moment to commend you guys for bringing this project in at the sales price that you have, because I mean, for one thing, you know, set aside that there's really no neighborhood that attempts what you guys are attempting in terms of sustainability. But even what there is, I mean, none of us on this board could afford to live in any place that's offering this level of green building, green amenities, and all of that. And to make this available for middle-class families in Carrboro, it's not getting us the totality of where we need to go, but you're not going to do that with one project. But it's a big step, because someday I think we all believe that everyone's going to need to live minimally how the folks at Viridia will, in terms of living lightly on the earth. And so I want to thank you all for helping Carrboro take a step in that direction. I hope that you have great success with this project.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll second that.
I think you had a citizen who wanted to speak.
Were there any other questions? None?
Just the question about the bike. So my understanding is the southern one, the easement, is there's an agreement with the neighboring property owner?
Yeah. Well, Chuck, back there.
We'll talk about working on that.
Yeah, they're open to sworn. A four-foot-wide gravel
He's
path.
Not sworn. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I'm just going to follow public hearing rules. If you want that to be in the record, he has to be sworn.
Yeah, can you be in the record, please? Thanks, Joel.
Only because, David, you gave it as a potential.
Yeah. Sorry.
Well, thank you, Joel.
Thanks, Chuck.
Please tell us where you're from, the evidence you're about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge.
I do.
Thank you.
What I have is my lot goes to Lisa Drive, which is actually the corner of my lot would be right up here. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a WASA sewer line that connects the old Fayetteville onto Lisa Drive. And we're just negotiating. What I would like is for the Homeowners Association to maintain a path that's 3 to 4 feet wide, like crushed stone, but it would require sort of a retaining, like a landscape timber retaining area at the very edge of my property that would run out to Lisa. And then the only other requirement would be the homeowners may be required to do some kind of liability insurance for anybody got injured mm-hmm. on that path.
Great. I would like, if we could have that be a condition, that would be great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chuck James, 110 Lisa Drive.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and we do have one speaker. Tripp and David, why don't you have a seat? Thank you. And Robert Kirshner, come on up. It does look like he's Robert, are you speaking on this one or the next one?
This one. I didn't sign up for it, but there's some things I heard I wanted to comment on if it's okay by you all. and I appreciate you recognizing me for this. This is actually an exciting situation here, and I just have some practical experiences to share and some on this. And I know that we've talked about parking before, and we have seen the experiences. And I know there've been some cases where I've raised issue about not enough parking. You thought it was great; it was no parking, and then they have to come back and beg to get permission for additional parking. I'm not necessarily saying that this needs to be changed on here. However, a couple recommendations, I would maybe throw out there for consideration is maybe some daytime reserve spaces for contractors such as cable, foam, painters, carpet installers, things like that. That always seems to be an issue that everybody forgets. They have contractors come on site. You did address concerning visitors parking. Now, I found even in my community that does have two spaces per a minimum per unit, you have some people that, including myself, that only has one vehicle, but you have others that come in with three, four, and they'll take up all the other spaces you can, or they'll have their guests come. They may only have one vehicle, but then they have a weekend party, and they have 20 people come in to take up all the spaces in there, so it's accommodating for that. The interesting thing about it is how you're planning on doing your parking there is also consideration of who's going to be the enforcer when parking spaces are tied up. You know, is that going to be the association? Is that going to be the homeowner's responsibility? And that needs to be clear. Concerning the cisterns, you said the above board that you're going to use for watering and various. Again, if it's possible, I might suggest be able to reuse that water, set it up a system so that water could be used for car washing. I don't care who you are. Some people's car that's who they are. They will be washing their car. And, again, we've experienced it even in drought situation. You have to go out of your way to tell people don't use the drinking water. They'll just use it because that's how they were grown up to do. You hook up the hose and you spray your car down and you soap it up. So if there's a way of incorporating car washing using the reuse water, that'd be something to consider out there. I am, again, particularly interested in the model that you're bringing in concerning the net metering with a common solar array system and into the homeowners association. And I know there's some older associations that have looked at that might have space. It might try to figure out how to implement that, but there are tax implications and so forth. So if the town would be willing to maybe set up a post of information on how that works, and if you're willing to provide how that works out, yeah, I think that'd be very useful information for people in the future. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks. Good suggestion.
Yeah.
Okay, no. Chip, you had.
Well, I just want to say. Come up to the microphone.
Yep.
Just at the very end there, when we were leaving, you suggested making the pedestrian easement through the James property a condition, but we can't have that be a condition.
Okay. Maybe the condition, just the stub.
Oh, our stub, sure.
Yeah.
All righty. Well,
we're ready to close the hearing.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor of closing the hearing?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The matter passes unanimously. So by my count, and let's just all compare notes, I've got a recommendation to modify. Yeah. Well, Mike, you had said something earlier. Let me just clarify. When you were saying the order that we needed to do this in, do we need to? Because there's three attachments, A, B, and S. Do we need to?
We need to discuss. Mike said we need to discuss the conditions first, and then we can go on to the.
That's what I was just asking.
Rezoning.
I would work through the. At least taking a, if you want to call it a straw poll, so to speak, on the CUP conditions. Or actually, you could work through the conditional use worksheet right down to the point where you're getting ready to issue the permit, but I wouldn't take the vote on the granting the application until then go back and do the rezoning first.
Can someone, I'd be willing, I have a list of seven conditions that I heard. Can I read those and see if...
Well, I just want to ask a question because we're looking to modify number one. Is that correct?
That's my proposal.
Okay. So I just want to be sure.
I was going to suggest making a new condition for that to make it clearer, but if Joel has language for number one...
No, I'll listen to yours.
Okay. I actually have that one plus, with the last one, that would turn out to eight. But go ahead. Let's see what you have.
Okay. I have the first would be the CPSC-compliant playground equipment. Mm-hmm. Second would be
size limiting the additional 25 lots at 1350. Third would be that the 1,100 square foot units are separated from each other. Fourth would be that, and this is to try to get to your point, Joel, that buyers are free to choose their financial institution of their, select the financial institution of their choice. Fifth would be that the sheds would be adequate for at least two bicycles. Sixth would be that the central path will be 6 feet wide. Mm-hmm. And the seventh would be that a path will stub out or connect to the James property.
And I also had, and I like Sammy's recommendation about disclosing the parking limits to buyers. And about the conservation of the existing trees and the potential to plant deciduous trees.
What is the condition that that would have to express that?
Well, it's the EAB's recommendation.
The EAB recommended that
the planting of deciduous trees, but Tripp had mentioned that they would attempt first to conserve as many existing trees
right,
on
what
the,
they're saying is they want to do already want to do more than the ordinance allows. So I'm not clear what the point of a condition is.
Because in that open play field, that area is usually left to be open as opposed to leaving trees and potentially planting more.
So basically to exact that condition
right.
For this.
Okay, so to have the maximum allowable trees.
By not requiring the open
that
space.
That it be open, right. That trees not only could be conserved that are already existing, but be able to plant additional trees.
So you're kind of modifying it from being a natural play field into being just natural area.
Mm-hmm. By not requiring the open
space.
It's not requiring the open space. It's not requiring the play field.
Right, not requiring the play field because they're adjacent to the school's major play fields.
I don't think that should enter into it.
I'm a little nervous about that.
I'm going to argue not to vote for that.
Yeah.
And I can tell you why.
Okay.
Well, the ordinance won't really allow it. I mean, there's a certain
amount.
I
don't have to argue about it then.
The natural play field, I think, I would agree with the natural play field.
There's a certain amount of flexibility in the board has exercised, as Marty's indicated previously, as to determining, you know, exactly what comprises a play field. But the ordinance is pretty clear in requiring a play field. And, you know, we've had some trees and frisbee fields and weeding among trees and some things like that. But basically to leave or construct what is, in essence, a forest, you know, from a policy standpoint, it may be a good idea, but it's inconsistent with the ordinance.
But they can be flexible in how open it is.
I think that's what they were doing with the plans, were they not?
Okay. All right. Good
one. The plans are already fairly flexible, leaning in the direction of not requiring an open play field.
So we have conditions 20 through 27 that we're all agreed on. Joel, do you have another?
Well, actually, I would propose another condition if they would accept it, to give a minimum of 3 months' notice. So if they can do it for the current residents.
So
that's a good one. Yeah.
So I just want to be clear on what we're so averse to. We're basically saying that we'd rather have there be grass under trees than forest ground cover.
No.
Is my understanding?
No, that's not my understanding. I'll tell you why I'm opposed to it. First of all, I don't want to set a precedent for something that's inconsistent with the ordinances that are pre-existing. If we want to change the ordinance, then we should change the ordinance.
But
I don't think that it's appropriate to change an ordinance by the fly, and I never have been since I've been on the board for 13 years, by fact-specific development. We need to look at it in terms of how it will affect the entire community and looking at it in the side of how we provide recreation. Now, it may work for this site because it is adjacent to McDougall Elementary and McDougall middle school. It's not going to work for every site in Carver unless they are adjacent to Carver High School and they're adjacent to Carver Elementary.
Right.
And so I don't want to develop an inconsistency with an ordinance that have somebody later come down the road and say, well, you did it for Viridia, do it for us, even though we are not next to Open Fields or Smith Middle School, because those are the schools that are, or Morris Grove, number five.
So, I mean, why not have the consistency be that this board is not so rigid with the rules but can recognize contexts of where things are being built and by doing so allow something that makes a lot of sense for a lot of people and not have to constrain ourselves for just because that's what's written.
Now we're getting into like something that's a little different than what we're facing right now.
And it sounded the same like staff.
If we want to come back and we examine that particular part of the ordinance at a different time, that's probably a good idea. But that's not an argument that anybody's going to win this evening. So.
Right. Well, and Sammy, you know, if you want to move, when we get to the point where we're proposing the conditions for this project, if you want to move a condition on this matter that we can vote on at that time,
yeah,
then that's fine, and then we'll have a vote on the record.
So we are at that moment, right?
Well, I just wanted to.
Ways to go.
Dan, when you mentioned the play, the tot lot, I guess it was, I didn't know if you had said, and I just want to clarify, this CPSC and ADA compliance.
Well, what staff recommended was that say CPSC compliant. I don't know if you need to separately specify ADA or if that's implicit.
I don't know.
I don't think it's implicit.
Okay, so CPSC and ADA.
Okay, and upon staff approval.
So, I mean, I'm not understanding. Are we supplying conditions at this moment?
Well,
right, we've got
a list.
We've got eight that we agree on, and we've got one more. So when we get to the later, when we get to where we're moving the conditions, then you can move your one more.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Then we can vote.
Okay.
So I can include this amongst the eight.
No, we're not voting.
You can get in the queue.
Okay, it's just a matter of process.
It's cool.
Well, except that if you're talking about adding a proposed condition after you've already granted the rezoning.
No, we're just adding. We're going to go through one person's list, and then we'll go to some other people's list.
Okay.
Already then.
Yeah, I think we're good, Mike.
All right. So run that seven. Actually, now it's with Joel's
is
eight.
Eight. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now we don't need to do that again. Everyone
okay.
knows what
they are.
Kathy
clear?
Knows what
Kathy, you got
that's
it?
The important thing.
Yeah. Okay.
And Kathy's on the ball.
And the applicant has accepted those additional conditions. Is that right? The applicant has accepted those additional eight conditions.
ADA access for the playground seems.
I'm not sure that was added, was it?
You didn't say ADA. It was CPSC, right? Did you think of the parks?
Well, Randy or Jackie.
Jackie had asked earlier, and I included it.
There be some ADA accommodation of some part of the of whatever's kind of typically done at a play area.
Right.
I mean, it's not all play areas aren't all ADA, but some aspect of them are.
Like ours out here by the farmers market is some ADA. Yeah.
Some aspect of it.
So just that it has an ADA component.
Okay, I think I'm worrying my attorney.
No, I just only no more than normal.
No more than normal.
No, I just wanted to make sure we understood what it was that would that the condition means, and some ADA component. And if that's acceptable to the applicant, I guess we'll just have to figure out exactly how that gets implemented. But I don't know enough about it.
It may be that's part of it. So, Dan, do you want to read your list for David?
Sure. Do you guys need to hear the list?
Yeah.
Okay. So, CPSC compliant playground equipment with an ADA component. Two, and that would be condition 20, 21, size limit, the additional 25 lots at 13
50 square feet. Number...
You mean home.
Homes, rather, homes. Thank you. 22 is that the 1,100 square foot units would be physically separated, not clustered.
No, interdispersed, isn't it?
Or dispersed. You could say it would be dispersed.
Right.
Would it be, could we just say that no more than two of them are together? I can guarantee no more than two of them would be put together, but it might just come that two of them are in one place. But they won't all be in one place. It would just be if that's the only place we could get a fit.
But you said it would similarly look like that, and they're all interspersed in that one.
They're staggered.
Yeah, they're staggered in that one.
Yeah, four of them are shown separately up there, and those are going to stay in those positions. But pending how things go between now and the construction drawings, we're going to need to sub out two other units. And, you know, I just can't guarantee that we won't have to put one of them that we sub out next to one of the existing ones.
Okay, so I can be clear.
Yeah.
You're going to have six 1,100 square foot units, and you're asking for two of those six, no more than two of those six to be together.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So we won't see two, two, two. We'll see two.
Two, and then
four separate, interspersed. I want to be clear. Okay. That's acceptable to me.
Great. 23, buyers are free to select the financial institution of their choice. 24, sheds will be adequate for at least two bicycles. 25, the central path will be 6 feet wide. 27, there will be a path either stubbed out or connecting through the James property. Oh, I lost track.
That was 26.
Okay, 27 is to disclose the parking limit to potential buyers, and 28 is to provide a minimum 3 months notice to current residents. Awesome.
Okay.
All right. Move the resolution.
Sandy had a condition that he wanted to share.
We're not moving the conditions yet.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh, so go ahead.
Okay. Moving the statement, it has been A1, the statement explaining the reasons for adopting the amendment to the zoning map.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Matter passes.
Move attachment B1, the ordinance amending the zoning map.
Well, let me just, again, if you want to make sure that you've got consensus on the conditions.
We do. We don't need a consensus. We just need a majority vote.
If I'd like to add some, when would be the appropriate time?
Now or never.
Okay.
So I would like to add... I like the car condition that they mentioned.
Could you clarify that a little bit?
So how they basically described how they'd manage the flex spaces and the rental to the homeowner association as written in attachment H, page 10. I could read the whole thing if you'd like. Every home in Viridio will have one dedicated parking spot within the carport structures to be erected on the northern side of the site. They will be assigned from east to west to the homes going from east to west, minimizing walking distance from the space to the home. An additional 29 flex spaces are provided for visitors and families with additional cars. Homeowners will be required to use the carport space for the storage of their first vehicle. However, homeowners who do not have a car will be able to rent the space to the homeowner association, which can, in turn, rent it to another house or use it for community purposes, such as the storage of an electric gator the developers intend to provide in order to increase accessibility to the lower row of homes. Other uses for the communal carport spaces might be for a car sharing program.
In addition to that, I really like what Robert Kirshner had to say about the daytime reserve spaces.
Okay.
And that needs to be a condition?
Well,
isn't that just something that they need to, like, figure out to do with common sense?
Yeah, I
don't know. I mean,
you can,
that's what I'm asking. I mean, doesn't it make sense?
I would rather not include that one on this list, so you can add it, as I've done with the other ones. A friendly disagreement.
Is that something that, because otherwise you could end up in a situation where, because they're already 10 spaces short, So what happens when they have contractors come in? I mean,
same thing every neighborhood has.
Well, they need to figure that out. I mean,
yeah, I would caution the board on getting terribly involved in the internal parking issues of a particular development with requirements that would require them to. In other words, you're setting their internal parking rules, and they'd have to come back to you and get these changed if they don't work the way they anticipate. And we've not done that before. And
So I'll drop that other thing. I mean, I trust y'all to manage those spaces as you deem fit. But what I would like to bring up is the question of the, and maybe Marty, you could clarify that ordinance for me, or for the board to just understand exactly what is required of them by ordinance.
And how that would affect. What's the topic?
The trees in the northern lot, whether they have to chop them down or not.
With regard to the playfield specifically? Well, the ordinance does not explicitly say whether a tree could be located on within a playfield or on a playfield. Doesn't say it can or doesn't say it cannot. So what we have done for at least a couple of past situations is word the condition such that the staff is allowed to work with the applicant during or kind of leading up to the construction kickoff meeting to go out, walk the site, and mark trees. This is just how we've done it historically on a couple of occasions, but mark trees that we can reasonably and mutually agree stand a good chance to survive with respect to damage to root zones and the like. If there is, there's the potential to have some disagreement there, but we would err, I would suggest we would err on the side of allowing the tree a chance to not cut it down just because someone involved thinks it definitely is going to die. If there's a majority of the things that may live, then we would give it a chance.
Okay.
But historically, it's just been done kind of in the field with some judgment by the staff and the applicant, and hopefully a reasonable mutual agreement as to which one should stay.
If that is sufficient, that would be the condition I'd like to include.
Well, not a condition for what standard practice.
It's what staff does.
Right.
That's what I was getting to before.
Yeah, it would just be, I think, Mike, you can jump in if you think it should be worded differently, but I think it's really just if there's a level of consensus among the board that a natural play field should be acceptable here, that's really about all we need to hear, I think.
I think that's right. I mean, that's what we've done in the past. It's not leaving it in a natural state. It's some judgment call as to how it gets modified so that it becomes a play field without knocking down all the trees. That's what we've done in the past.
So play field and sports can include things you do in the woods, like capture the flag.
The one thing I would clarify with respect to the ordinance, for better or worse.
Not things you do in the woods.
We're not even going there.
We're not going there.
People hunt in the woods as a sport, too.
We also have open space requirements. So, anywhere from 20 to 40% of the land.
I'm just interpreting what it says, right?
Well, for better or worse, the ordinance does say grassed. So it would probably be inconsistent with the ordinance to have it not be grassed.
But if we're in consensus about natural, then that would be okay.
And we're going to come back and look at this at some point, too. So you might want to make a motion after we're done with this that the board put on our agenda to come back and revisit the open space and tree and grass issues.
Yes.
That's
probably acceptable.
And I'll second it for you.
If
you just let us finish this, yeah.
Thank you. Just quickly clarify.
Only if we're down for
We've historically considered natural to mean trees, not mulch or forest, natural ground, because the ordinance does specify grass.
Okay. It's just, to me, it's just a shame that, there's a plenty of grass, a huge field that we do want, and we just can't. We've done exceptions before. It's just for some reason we can't do it here.
Well, were this not located immediately next to some huge open space of grass, that would be something different. So.
Right.
So whatever exception needs to be made needs to be tailored narrowly.
Well, it would just be very clearly, like, it doesn't have to have grass. But it sounds like there's a version to that, so I'll let go of it.
Mike, it does say grass. I mean,
it says a play field.
Yeah.
There's a grass, well drained. It says what it says.
There you go.
But could play field be, include trees? And Marty said before it could, so I think...
And I think there's some reasonable interpretation with respect to whether it all, whether every single square inch needs to be covered with grass.
Cool.
Some respect for what the ordinance currently says, I guess, unless it's changed.
All right. All righty. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Back to Dan.
Sorry.
Back to me.
That's cool.
Did vote on
Thank
the,
you,
or the first resolution, right? Is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And, but we got interrupted before we voted on the actual rezoning.
Right. Attachment B.
Move to rezoning.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None. Okay, motion carries. And now we have...
Yeah, that zoning worksheet. Move the application as complete.
Second.
The CP worksheet.
All those in favor?
Aye.
And opposed? Okay. And
move
claims.
The application complies with the LUO requirements.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
And opposed? Okay.
Move that
consideration
number 3.1 for the conditions plus the conditions 1 through 28 that have been stipulated.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
And opposed?
Aye.
Okay.
Move that we grant the application.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And then opposed? Okay. Motion carries. All right.
Okay,
very good.
Sammy, do you want to make
I'd like to make a motion to look into the open space or whatever that condition was to
the play field.
Not so restricted to how we understand what playing is.
Right. Let's make it play field instead of open space because those are separate issues, okay?
Okay,
so be careful. Okay.
We might want to consider natural local.
Okay, so is your motion that that the board will consider and have a discussion about natural versus grassed play fields in our development requirements?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so I'll second that.
Yeah. Great, thanks, Jackie.
Okay.
All those in favor?
Wait, and this is like just for us to get a report from staff, and we'll continue talking about
and
it.
And have a conversation.
Yeah, we'll have a conversation.
Okay, all those in favor?
All right.
None opposed? Okay.
One.
Oh, good. All right, one of them. You have to speak up louder. All right. One opposed. All right. Let's take a couple minute break. Can we do that? Pardon?
Don't we just have a quick item, or is it a long item?
Can I remind everybody, based on the conversation last week, there's a need for a closed session.
Right.
All right. As well.
Okay, so let's take a break.
Let's take a quick break. Thank you.
I am.
We got a quarter. We got four. Let's go on.
All right.
With my sister.
Yeah.
Okay, so do we have to have a motion to resume or?
No.
We're good to go.
Yeah,
okay.
Go.
So.
They'll come back.
They'll come back, yeah. All right, so our second item is public hearing on land use ordinance text amendment regarding the subdivision covenants and energy and water conservation. And
you know, we
just
started at 7:30.
Oh, yeah. All right.
I overslept. Sorry.
Couldn't help myself.
And I am going to pass the gavel to
we just started
Aaron.
There you go.
Okay. Robert, are you going to speak on this one? Because Robert, okay.
We've got a staff presentation.
Okay, yeah, I know. I'm just checking because he switched out.
You want to speak again?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Are you all ready?
Y'all, I didn't listen to you.
Are you all ready for Trish?
Yes, yes,
we
sir.
Are.
Again, everyone. In 2009, the town sought and obtained a charter amendment to allow the town to prohibit restrictive subdivision covenants or restrictive covenants that prevented the installation of solar collectors and other devices that conserved energy or generated energy or that captured, stored, or reused water. There are several provisions in the ordinance currently that deal with homeowner associations and their responsibilities for maintenance of common areas and so forth. And so we do, for developments that include them, review subdivision documents and home restrictions and covenants currently. This text amendment was initiated by the Board of Aldermen and that charter amendment in response to a citizen indicating that they were not able to install a clothesline in their neighborhood, which was covered by some restrictive covenants. The charter amendment went through a little bit of back and forth in the General Assembly before it was approved later in August of 2009. And the draft ordinance we have in front of the board this evening is very closely matches, identically really, the provisions of the charter amendment. this ordinance adds a new section to permits and plat approval, specifying the authority to prohibit these kinds of restrictive covenants for subdivisions. The provision states that lots within residential subdivisions may not be conveyed subject to restrictive covenants unless the plat approval authority has determined that it is in compliance with this section. And so those that language has to be submitted for final plat for review. There are some limitations in that the installations have to be done on behalf of a person who is otherwise has a otherwise has the property right to install such device, and the approval of the final plat and the restrictive covenants cannot be granted if it's found that there is language that is prohibiting the orderly installation of a number of devices that were specified in the charter amendment and include solar collectors, clotheslines, rain barrels, garden fences, or further technology or devices that generate or conserve energy or capture, reuse, or store water. There are some limitations of in the draft ordinance as well. Specifically, the provisions don't apply to condominiums that are created under Chapter 47A or 47C of the general statutes. The draft ordinance is not intended to prohibit the adoption or enforcement of some provisions or rules within property owner regulations that affect a common area that are designed to ensure for the installation and maintenance in a safe manner, that is, so it won't pose a risk to any persons, or that regulates the location or screening of any device so long as that those regulations don't effectively prevent the reasonable use of the device by screening a solar array or, you know, a clothesline for that matter. There is a Vision 2020 principle that specifically encourages or articulates the town's policy to publicly promote every available means of energy conservation, and then the town taking some actions on its own to seek the generation of energy. We did receive comments today from OWASA, a staff review of the draft ordinance, indicating the staff OWASA staff report for the draft ordinance that you have in front of you. Several advisory boards have reviewed the ordinance. The economic sustainability did recommend adoption with the suggestion that there be a clearer definition of garden fences. I don't think we have much room to, well, I guess we could define garden fences if you all feel we need to, but I don't think we can change the language very much from what's in the charter amendment. The planning board recommends approval of the draft ordinance. The environmental advisory board did as well. Orange County reviewed the ordinance for consistency with the joint planning land use plan and didn't find any inconsistencies, and we, the staff, are recommending adoption of the resolution finding consistency with Vision 2020 and the ordinance itself. Happy to try and answer your questions.
Mark, I just wanted to know if when the Economic Sustainability Commission made the observation about garden fences being kind of unclear, can you give us some other clarity on that? What?
Well, I think that their concern was that there, in some neighborhoods, you know, if there are garden fences being put, that there is an aesthetic consideration that homeowners associations may still want to be able to exercise, and they felt that there should be some reasonable, that it was reasonable to do that in terms of aesthetics and the uniformity or feel of a neighborhood. So they were seeking some.
So could the,
clarification or
would that include like deer fencing that could be like 10
I think
feet?
That is specifically their concern. Some fences that are very large and not as attractive as
well, and that's really the intent of the ordinance is for deer fencing because that's where you run into problems.
Okay.
You know, it's not a little 6-inch picket fence that is decorated.
Or that's useful.
Trish, this is kind of related. And we just approved the previous, like Viridia, and I don't know if would this apply to them, and if not, can we forward this to them just so they can consider including them in their homeowner?
This will apply to it will apply to existing approved developments that have not yet had their final plats approved.
Okay.
And it will also apply to Viridia.
I think Viridia is pretty much beyond this.
Right, but it wouldn't hurt.
Thanks, Trish.
I held off passing this information out for this moment. I apologize for it. I appreciate you know, come here to make the comments. You notice I even wore my green shirt tonight. This is not an issue about conservation, and you know, and what I'm here for. It's just some definitions and issues that are coming up that I even suggested back when you were pushing this in the first place that I wanted to try to get clarified before I even went to legislation. Just for. Just for people at home, can you also see some of the information I'm providing here? Basically, one of the concerns I have with that list that was provided within the ordinances, there was specific items, and one of the concerns I had was the definition. I know every time I talk to people here, it was like, well, clotheslines can be this, that, and the other thing, but it's wasn't really clear in the language, and that was one of the points I kept trying to bring up. And when you said the clothesline, and clothesline is a very specific item, and I was trying to make it drying device, clothes drying or air drying devices, which could be much more inclusive, such as drying racks, handy line clothesline. So, and there's two reasons for this. Is number one is, I'll get into a little bit later, but to give some flexibility of what could be accommodable to a situation where specifically a clothesline may not necessarily be appropriate. So one of the suggestions I was putting out there was to potentially add the, change the language to be a clothes drying device. Second area, the second situation is, again, where it gets a little, can be a little dicey. And I know you've got lawyers in here, and Mike could point out that the devil's in the details. and there, when you're dealing with homeowners associations and homeowners, there could be some very specific differences in ownership and who has responsibilities for things. So one of the other items that came up that I did speak about previously when it was first being introduced had to do with common area versus commonly maintained area. What are the homeowners association's responsibilities? What are their liabilities? Addressing this type of issue is was also addressed by the I'm going to have the agency wrong now. It's the federal agency concerning airwaves, the FCC, I think it is, and dealing with satellite dishes and where they can be installed and who, how they can be regulated in certain circumstances. So again, I'm not coming here to put down an ordinance that you're passing, actually, which I'm supportive of overall. I'm just adding some suggestive recommended changes to the to some of the language to kind of clarify it and get some reasonable flexibility. I think it's also important to understand what the role of the homeowners association, and it's not just for you all, but even people at home when that are dealing with homeowners associations. They're only as good or as bad as people put on, just like a town government and so forth, you or a state government, you elect the worst person, you're going to get what you pay for. You hire somebody, you elect somebody who really cares for the community and works for the community, it's going to be reflective and can negotiate these things out. So what I spoke about before was the emphasis being on homeowners have the responsibility to understand their homeowners associations and how they work, and they can work with them to make changes themselves. So some additional things that I came up here with the modification to that part two, where it kind of just stopped at opposed to risk of safety. I just kind of wanted to bring in additional information, particularly having to do with multifamily dwellings that where they're attached. Recognizing that what a person does, a single individual may wish to do because it's the fad or it's the latest thing they saw or that's just the way that they want it and do it, can have a profound effect on other their neighbors and other people that might actually share some of the building space or could be affected by the building space there. So I just wanted to add some flexibility for a homeowner association to be able to give some regulations and manage all that and give some guidelines on how some of this can work. In addition to part three, again, the way this was structured, it was very specific to it was specific on certain items such as a rain barrel or a clothesline. In other areas, it was kind of loose. And the issue I could see is, while the ordinance says I can have a rain barrel even though you built a cistern for me to use, I don't want that. I want a rain barrel, and I want to duplicate all this, duplicate everything you have, because the town says I can do it. So I just want to put some reasonability into it that association can say, not necessarily a clothesline. You can, you know, we have drying racks, or you can have a folding clothesline, or when it comes to a rain barrel, we have a massive common cistern that we can use You know, we have some reasonable alternative to the specific item that you want. I think another thing I got to kind of point out here is you come to me and say you want a solar panel, a solar array, and we're saying, well, wait a minute. It is reasonable for us to say, for aesthetic reasons and so forth, we're not prohibiting solar collection. What we're just saying is it needs to appear like a shingle of the roof as opposed to a panel that stands right out. So that's, again, this is where I was trying to introduce the language to give some flexibility for reasonable alternatives to a particular item. I think there's a couple pieces that we need to be added here. One, again, is provision to make clear that the reasonable expectation is that for the maintenance of these items here carries with the land, so that when you sell your property to a new buyer, they are fully aware that they're buying that responsibility and it doesn't magically return over to the homeowner association. So I think it's a point that really needs to be clear out there. And then I think we need to add a section E, which this is kind of a give and take here. We're telling associations you can't control any of this anymore. So I think the get back to that is, well, this is going to relieve them of any kind of liability, responsibility for what's been installed by an individual homeowner that could potentially otherwise come back to an association. For example, if we're in a shared community, you install a rain barrel, I walk by, I let my dog drink from it, they get sick. Because quite honestly, rain barrels can have the potential of this is just stagnant water, and it can potentially be have parasites and so forth. The association should not be held liable because you had a rain barrel out there that was easily accessible. So I'm just trying to establish a line of defense here that kind of protects the association from liability from the actions of an individual.
Who says we can't do team work?
So in summary, I kind of line this, I hope this is all clear, I just kind of line it up here as, again, these are just some brief of the changes I'm proposing here. Section B there, you'll see that there are some dots there, it's because I eliminate, for sake of space, I eliminate certain warnings. I'm just not suggesting that they be eliminated or changed. What is changed is I have crossed out in red and highlighted in yellow. So I hope you'll take these into consideration. And
thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah,
thank you.
Why don't we put our attorney on the spot and ask him for some reaction to some of Bob's suggestions here.
Thank you again, Bob.
Do we really need to work? This is really, really broad, this stuff.
Well, my question is, can you really do it? In other words, the enabling legislation is written in a certain way. Some of these things, you know,
right, it says clothesline in the legislation. So
right.
You can't take the word clothesline.
That's the kind of question that I'm trying to ask.
Well, I guess I wouldn't, because it, besides which, a number of the, as I understand it, some of the things that Mr. Kirshner is requesting are inconsistent with the intent of the provision. In other words, the way the legislation was written and the way the ordinance is written, it would preclude homeowners association from having the ability to do some of the things that Mr. Kirshner is suggesting they ought to have the ability to do. So, I mean, if you some of the changes could be made by modifying the ordinance, known as by giving the homeowners association greater discretion than it would than it has under this draft to limit the ability for an individual homeowner to do that which they would like to do in terms of installing energy saving or generating devices. As I understand it, for example, one of the suggestions is that instead of allowing them to have a clothesline, perhaps the association would say, well, you can have a drying rack, for example, as an illustration. Well, that would be the kind of thing which, under the current draft, they couldn't do. I mean, the draft would not allow me to approve a set of restrictive covenants that would give that kind of discretion to the homeowners association. Mm-hmm. So I think the answer is yes, some of the things could be done, but they would be inconsistent with what I understood the intent of this ordinance was designed to do. Some of the other things, in terms of being, I certainly concede that, you know, in establishing the list of items, we were not intending to be complete. In other words, we listed because we couldn't be that complete, not being that smart. And so it contains the language or other further technology or device designed specifically to generate or conserve energy. So, for example, all of the things that are listed on the, like the drying racks, handy lines, clothes rack, umbrella trees, all of those things, it seems to me, would be covered by the ordinance, by that generalized language. I mean, it clearly states clotheslines, but other things like clotheslines would also be covered in my interpretation of it, and would be in the covenants could not restrict those sorts of things. Beyond those comments, I don't think that there is a problem with liability being created on the part of the homeowners association for things that are done on private property. I don't see that as an issue, nor do I see it as a requirement that, I mean, obviously when someone sells a tract of land, all the things that are on that tract of land are going to be sold with it, I mean, that are part of the real estate, that aren't personal property. And so, I mean, if there is a solar panel on the roof, then when somebody buys a house, they know they're buying the solar panel too, unless something specifically in the contract says you can remove the solar panel. So I think that's
probably we don't need to stipulate. Mark.
Well,
it's late.
Yeah,
just got here at 10. You may be feeling more patient than I am. I feel like Bob's had his say, and we need to get on addressing the ordinance.
All right.
All right.
Well, I feel like, you know, we worked this legislation through the legislature. It wasn't easy because of the Republicans, even then in the minority, who were somewhat difficult. And I think staff has made a really simple expression of the legislation we've achieved, and I'd like us to go ahead and adopt it.
Second.
So I'll move the resolution of consistency.
Second.
And just to point out, I think it is the fact that it's special. It's a special bill that we're kind of constrained in how flexible in adjusting this. So for that reason, I think that we can, you know, we're not going to submit a special bill again.
And I also think we tried to address, you know, some of the concerns of property owners associations by saying that by having some reasonableness type language mm-hmm. in here. So trying to
specifically one thing that caught my eye here is essentially if you look at the back page of Bob's handout here under number 2. I don't know about a lot of the language that Bob has suggested here, but part of what he's saying is that maybe it should say person or animal, or it says mm-hmm. the risk of safety to any person, or maybe we could add or animal. I think it would be a reasonable suggestion.
The only caveat, are you talking about domesticated animals? Because, you know, deer, I'm just saying. I'm not trying to keep
go
deer alive.
Well,
person or pet.
Or pet, yeah, or whatever. Yeah, that's
yeah, that might make more sense.
Yeah.
Or pet.
I mean, some people put things in the yards that they want to hurt animals.
Yes, it's true.
But, I mean, I wouldn't do that. I'm
like
just saying.
Traps or something.
Slug bait.
I'm not going to even do that.
What about somebody's goats? Is that a pet?
Mr. Attorney, what language would you suggest there? I mean, domesticated animal or
okay. Domesticated animal.
Okay.
So we need to vote on that consistency resolution that we can include that change.
All right.
In the ordinance.
Mr. Mayor, real quick.
I'm sorry. The time really has passed, and it really is late. We have an executive session we've got to have after this.
Okay.
Okay, so it's been moved and seconded for the resolution of consistency. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed are passed unanimously.
I move the ordinance with the stipulation that it would say safety of any person or domestic animal.
Second.
Domesticated.
Thank you.
There's one typo and under subsection A where it says chapter 447 of the 2009 section laws, it should say 427. Just
right.
A typo
okay.
There.
Okay. With that correction, I'm assuming from
yes,
the
of course.
All right. All those in favor of the ordinance signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously.
Thank you. Walter Dalton and Joe Hadley.
Move to go into executive session for the purpose of personnel matter.
Second.
Moved and seconded that we go into executive session for discussion of personnel matter. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Closed session.
Closed session.
Closed session. That's what I meant.
All those in favor.